I listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
I'll let you know if we, to all the, oh God. Oh my God. I'm reading the fucking instruction, like to state your name. He's one big block, and I'm like, that Skype? Biggie didn't talk about Skype.
You want me to start count you down again?
Yes, please.
All right. In 3, 2.
To all the ladies in the place with style and grace, allow me to lace these lyrical douches in your bushes with who rocks grooves and makes moves with all the mommies. The back of the club sipping Moet is where you find me. The back of the club macking holes, my crew's behind me. Mad question asking, blunt passing, music blasting, but I just can't quit. Cause one of these honeys Biggie's got to creep with.
He read maliciously. Hey! Welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen.
And we're in the house on a Monday. Mm-hmm. Getting your week started off right, guys. Right here with the Black Guy Who Tips. Live on Crowdcast. You can always check us out, live and see us, with the setup and the new studio and, decorations and all that stuff and, get in some of this racism so you can guess the race. And whenever you hear these Biggie lyrics starting the show, I feel like you already know who it is, but I will, the man who needs no introduction, but I'll give him one anyway. It's my man JL Covan from the Righteous Prick podcast. What's going on, JL?
Oh, a lot and nothing. Thank you for having me, as always. I very much appreciate this.
Well, I feel like it is a lot going on. I mean, it's a very big day for you, man, and we want to help make it the biggest day. Mm-hmm. Can you tell the folks what they need to do to help you out over here?
Yes. My new album is out, Israeli Tortoise. Very proud of it. Chris Lambert, you'll hear his voice introducing me on track one. But I was gonna have like tomorrow be the official release, but because I have so many different places, kind of, your podcast now and it's live, and then some other places kind of announcing it and tweeting about it tomorrow, that I figured, you know what, let me just start the momentum now. So that's why I kind of announced that it was ready to go. But yeah, it's my new stand-up album. A lot of work went into it, a lot of stress, and obviously not to play the woe is me card, but obviously as somebody who's an independent comedian, you know, no management, no agent, I self-produced the album like my other four, it'd be nice to get kind of a groundswell and as much support behind it in the next like 24 hours, because that will help me. You know, the iTunes charts are somewhat easy to manipulate, so if I can really get a critical mass in the next 12 to 24 hours of people going to iTunes, buying it, giving it a review, if people who are at the show who don't want to buy it or are like, well, I already heard it, even just giving a 5-star review in this period will help. But obviously I'd love it if people would do both. Yeah. But I'm very proud of it. And if you've heard any of, I mean, obviously your fans have heard me on the show. Some have seen me live, but, if you've heard any of my albums, this is, you know, very much in keeping with the quality and tone of my other albums.
Well, also that it's only $9.99 on iTunes right now. You posted a link on your Facebook page, and it lets you listen to like 30 seconds of each track or whatever. Right. And sound quality wise, I mean, this shit sounds so good, man. Like, I think a lot of times people hear independent, people hear, I did this myself, and then the assumption is that it's gonna be some shit, you know? Right. and this sounds so good. I'm just like, okay, JL, just wrap this up, send it to Comedy Central Presents, and they can get paid
right
for doing absolutely nothing.
That's Juan, the guy who did the recording for me. He's the guy who does all the sound work on my sketch videos. Okay. Except, you know, the ones that are obviously done in my apartment by me.
Right. Yeah, well, it sounds great, man. And I can't,
he did a great job.
I can't wait to buy it. To the best time to buy it, is it like if people are listening live right now, should they go buy it right now, or do you prefer that they buy it on Tuesday?
It's tough to say, because like right now I just looked and it was like 31 on the comedy charts.
Mm.
And that's before, you know, I haven't had you promoting it yet. I haven't had Corolla promoting it. I told a lot of my people to buy it on Tuesday. So if I had the strength to just be like, everybody at 10:30 a.m. tomorrow Eastern time, buy it, I would do that. Like, right. But I just say, you know what, buy it just within the next day, because I don't have that kind of strength to be like, you know, I'm not Malcolm X putting up the hand and then pointing everybody to iTunes at 10:30. No comedian should have that much power. So, you know, I just, you know, if people, you know, they can buy it now. It's out there. So I would just say, I just like people to buy it by lunch tomorrow.
All right. Well,
then I can kind of check at noon and be like, oh, number three or number 197 or whatever.
Well, I'll definitely be in that number of people buying it for myself, man. I bought albums of yours in the past, and each time been blown away by the quality and the craftsmanship, man. You know, we've seen you in person before performing, you know, worth every dollar, man.
It is.
I feel like people should get out here and support good work, you know, and support people that are out here, especially people trying to do it on their own. Like, we don't have the apparatus and the structure behind us to solidify, like, the failures. Like, it's one thing to solidify solidifying success or something going viral or whatever, that's one thing, but that's not really what why people who are incorporated into these bigger entities, that's not really why they succeed. It's more that when they do have something that's not as good, or they do have something that they worked a lot of time on, it doesn't go viral, there's always a tomorrow, there's always another thing they can just do the next day. And I think people take that stuff for granted, you know, because we, especially when you do good quality work, your work folds into other good quality work, and in their minds they never make the connection that, oh wait, one of these things could go away and this other thing is kind of like, you know, like Comedy Central is here to stay. You know, Louis C.K. is here to stay. But if your stand-up sounds as good as Louis, or is as professionally done, as much craftsmanship put into it, the association is just like, well, yeah, JL, whether I buy this or not, he'll be around. It's like, not really, man. Go support these people.
And it's one of those things, I almost treat it like a pledge drive, except you get something for it. It's not like I'm saying donate 50 and get a tote bag. I'm like, if you give me $10, which is what 90% of comedy albums cost, you get the comedy album, and then this money all just goes right back into me trying to build up whatever the hell I'm trying to do. You know? So it's like, it'd be great to be like, oh, I sold 500 copies or 1,000 copies. I probably won't even get to that level, at least not in this initial push. But anybody out there who likes what I do and thinks of it, you know, I like to think of it as like, some people say, hey, donate to this if you like what I do, and that's cool, and people need to do that. But for me, it's like, don't even think of it as donating. It's like, the album's worth it, and you help me make all these videos that cost me money, produce the podcast, which, you know, I don't get any money for, et cetera, et cetera. Help me go on road gigs where I barely, you know, make any money. So it's like, it's all just helping all of that. If you like any of that, then this is your chance to sort of be like, all right, my $10, my $9.99 goes to continuing that for another year. Unless you hate what I do and it's like, I need to stop this right away.
And how many albums is this for you?
This is five.
Five, fifth album, and, all right.
And the thing is, Mike Payne, who's been, you know, he's been on my podcast a lot. I was talking to him off air and he said, and I said to him, I was like, I know what people think, Fry. They're like, oh, who's he to have this many, like, that's stupid because he's a nobody. And Mike Payne said to me, he said, yeah, I would probably think the same thing, except I know your material and I know your writing and I know your skills. So it's like, to somebody, they might hear like this nobody, that just sounds like a dude who's producing, like anytime he has a joke, he just puts it on an album. And it's like, no, but I will put my last three albums in the last 5 years. I did Too Big to Fail, Keep My Enemies Closer, and now Israeli Tortoise. And I will put, and this is one of those things I'm wary of because I'm always sounding like my own hype man, but you have to when you don't have PR or a company or a label. I'll put those three albums in 5 years up against, you take any one of those albums and put it up against any of these kind of industry darlings who make an album every 7 years. Like, I'm talking about my peers, like the 10 to 12 year people who are trying to break through to that next level. Some of them you see on TV a lot and they're like, they can't compete with that volume of material. And I'll put any one of my three albums in the last 5 years against their 8-year project. So, you know, I don't know. I just, it's like at some point I'm hoping that I break through and I break through big because I've got more than enough skill and material and, you know, Louis C.K. puts out 3 albums in 5 years and he's a fucking god.
Right.
And I will put my stuff up next to his. And I know that sounds like arrogant and not worthy, but I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, I'll
put these 3 albums against his last 5 years.
Yeah, I don't know why you had to pull your punches on that anyway. You know, it's not like a threat to him that, you know,
right.
You think you're good. Like, what the fuck? Like, you out here getting on stage feeling like you put in some work and you're worth something?
If you don't think you're the best, why even go out on stage like, shit, I think I'm the best podcaster in the world.
Alright, and also, I was gonna ask, like, is there anything different about doing it a fifth time? Like, are there different challenges than the first time you did it?
Well, the funny thing is, I have more trouble getting people because some of my friends have, you know, have families and like when my first album, which is my worst, the first album is like fun and has like good material, but it's a rough product because it was like, I was just like, well, I have an hour of material, so now let me do an album. But there was no really consistent theme to it. But it was fun because I did a lot of impressions and stuff. So it's like people could listen to that and be like, oh, it's fun. It's not, there's nothing genius about it or anything, but there's some good bits and there's some funny impressions. So, but from the second album to this one, it's like people, the enthusiasm, because the first two albums, it was like all my friends were like, oh, let's go. And now it's at that point where I have a few fans, a few friends, but and I have to like cobble them together because now I'm at that level where I feel like I should have broken through and have a bigger fan base to where I can just be like, oh, I'm headlining Helium in Philly for the next 3 nights. We're going to tape all those shows, but I'm not, my career isn't where my skills are. So I end up having to cobble together like some friends and some fans and some coworkers and be like, everybody come in. And then it doesn't matter for an album because it's like what you hear is what you hear. It doesn't matter where I was or who was there. You hear the finished product.
And you're at that point too where it's not a novelty to those people anymore. Like, you know what I mean? Where it's like, when you start, it's kind of like your friends are like, oh, let's all kind of contribute to this cool thing that you're doing.
Right.
But after you've done anything, it doesn't matter.
Like, you want to do this for a living? I got to go again.
Yeah, you got to, like, you could be a fucking NBA player. 12 years in is not as important to go to every game.
Your kids are like, you know what, daddy, I'd rather go to Lollapalooza.
Yeah, like my cousin Anthony's in the NBA and it's like whenever he comes to town, the first, you know, his rookie year especially, we used to go, we come out and we bring the whole family out and there's fucking buy a row of seats and we're going crazy. Yeah. He might play 5 minutes and we're just like fucking crazy for that 5 minutes. And now it's like, he plays for the Thunder and he'll play 20 minutes and we'll just kind of be like, oh, Anthony had a good game last night. Did you go? Nah,
that's so depressing.
That's some shit to do, you know. I mean,
but I understand. Yeah. But my thing also, and I've said this on my podcast in some of my angrier moments, is that it's funny because friends of mine who have a lot of shit going on support how they can. That may not always mean going to the gig, but that might mean buying the album or listening to the podcast. But it's always it's like a lot of my friends who have a lot of shit going on want to support people who have shit going on.
Right.
And then my friends, especially like friends that I've known my whole life and like faded away. And it was like they weren't doing anything. It was like they either couldn't relate or didn't appreciate what it was or didn't feel good about their own shit.
Right.
And it was like they kind of faded away. And they're the ones where you're like, you're not doing shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I once had a friend who went to still a very close friend, so I don't, you know, I tell it jokingly and lovingly, but once went to a bar next door to a bar where I was performing. And I was just like, you can't drink a fucking beer here?
Yeah, well, then you'll be there and it'll fuck everything up. Now I gotta pay attention and laugh at things.
I didn't come for the jokes.
Oh, man.
But then there's the same friend who whenever I'm, if he's talking to a chick at a bar, loves to wedge me in as a comedian. Like, I'm going to become an interesting topic of conversation. Mm. And I'm like, don't do that. Believe me, nobody wants to hear me talk about comedy.
So, hey, look, go out and support the album. It's called Israeli Tortoise. It's out on iTunes. Get it ASAP. Get it, within the next day or so. And let's see if we can move JL up the charts. Mm-hmm. So that,
that's right, because Corolla's people are going to tweet it tomorrow and post about it. And we all know that you guys pack way more. You guys are like a middleweight.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of power per pound.
Right.
Whereas Corolla's kind of like the lumbering heavyweight. And if he connects, he might knock you out. But you guys might have already landed 8 punches by the time his people have reared back.
Right. Yeah. He's like Mike Tyson. And we're like the dude with that star punch and knockout. You got his select. So make sure you guys do that, man.
An Israeli Tortoise. It's my feminist anthem.
It's about time. This is your lemonade.
It actually is a very bizarre tribute to women, that title, because I compare, just as background to anybody listening, it's basically I compare women to both the country of Israel in that they sort of act normal despite being surrounded by danger at all time. And they're like the tortoise in that men have it easy for a while, and then at the end of the race of life, women just walk by our dead bodies to the finish. So I combined it into Israeli tortoise. So.
That's dope, man. I was going to ask you what the name was, but now I was like, I'm going to listen and find out anyway. But that's
it's a very detailed bit, but that's the summary.
You know, speaking of summer, let's talk about movies. Did you see Suicide Squad?
I did.
What'd you think?
My thing with DC, and you know me, I'm a movie guy, not a comic guy.
Right.
So I like good movies, and I don't like bad movies. It has nothing to do with source material, but it sometimes coincides with what the purists think. And I feel that DC now their movies reek of desperation. Like, they are in such a hurry to catch up to the Avengers. Like, they jam these, like, 7 backstories into, like, 25 minutes. The Joker, I was secretly very happy, or maybe not so secretly, that I just thought Jared Leto's performance was a nothing. Mm. It was a lot of makeup and a lot of, like, showmanship of bullshit. But I laughed at a couple of lines. But I thought the effects of the Enchantress, like that end scene, looked like something out of the mid-80s. It was like terrible effects.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I thought the special effects in throughout the movie looked pretty good, but that jerking shit she was doing that was supposed to be her like sorcery or whatever, it looked really bad. Like,
right.
She needed to watch like Rihanna's work video or something
before
trying to pull that shit off, because like she was just like jerking her body all around and shit, and it was just like,
right.
I don't, this feel like you said, it felt cheesy, like something out of the 80s. The thing about it for me that was so weird was, I think individually I enjoyed a lot of people's performances.
Yeah,
I just thought the story was just really bad.
Oh, I think the writing was the worst. I think the writing, which is why writing is so important to movies.
Yeah.
I thought the writing was as bad, both in dialogue, but more in like story structure. Like when the Enchantress, and once again, this is somebody who doesn't know the backstory, but I can obviously follow a movie. Enchantress just grabs a statue off a shelf and goes, brother.
Right.
And like 30 seconds later, he's like, building a weapon. Building your weapon, and I'm like, what weapon?
Right, he has no
weapon.
Explain this weapon. Like, I'm sitting here. I'm not asking you to like spell everything out like I'm a 4-year-old. But like, you're rushing to the. I was like, wait, this is the final bad guy? I thought that was gonna be like the first test for the Suicide Squad.
Right.
And then like 70 minutes later, that's still the final villain.
I felt bad for all the people who review movies that couldn't like helped themselves and made some sort of like, I saw Suicide Squad and I want to kill myself pun, sure. Or you know, a bunch of stuff like that is like in 2016 is inappropriate. So how many people just right. had a first draft, you know, suicide joke and they're just like, but seriously, this movie is not good. Sure. I just thought it was okay, man. Did you see the Bourne movie?
No, and that was one of those ones where I was on the fence because first of all, this summer for me has been bad. So like, I'm not as excited. Like now I'm cautious when a new movie is coming out this summer. I'm like, and when I saw that it was only in the 50s on Rotten Tomatoes, I said, that's a bad sign because I love the first three Bournes, especially number two and number three.
Yeah.
I thought were two of the best action movies ever. And when this came out, like in the 50s in Rotten Tomatoes, I said, oof, cause that's like a well-respected director. Matt Damon's a big star. So, but I saw a joke you posted, but I didn't know if you meant it. Like you said,
I meant it. It's Jason. I said more.
Or something?
I said Jason Bourne, more like Jason Boring, because right. that motherfucker spent first of all, everyone knows my favorite movie genre of all time is Impossible White Man movies. I literally grade everything with a curve in Impossible White Man. You don't even really have to be a good movie. But
I need to interrupt you on your behalf here.
Yeah.
You listen to Levitard, right?
Sometimes.
Man, last week they went, it might have been Friday or Thursday, they went on like an extended run
yeah.
on Impossible Women, and they talked about it like it was their own thing or it was a widely known thing. But Bomani gave you credit on their show like last year or 2 years ago, right?
Right, yeah, last year.
And now, see, this is what happens. And this is how it gets to white people. It gets filtered through the light-skinned Cuban community first. That's how they're like money laundering the black idea.
Right.
And then soon it's like Skip Bayless will be doing a special on the Impossible White Man movies.
Well, I'll say this for the record. I have no ill will or beef towards them discussing
it. I think it's funny.
I did hear that I didn't get my credit and stuff, but I wasn't really worried about that. I don't really.
No, and it wasn't like they were still, but you know what I mean. Yeah. It's like, it feels like still too new a term to just now talk about it like it's a thing. Like everybody knows it's a thing.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is, I still own ImpossibleWhiteMan.com. Which directs to our website. and a page on the explanation on, my Impossible White Manifesto. The other thing too is, the thing that always kills me in the discussion is that everyone who talks about Impossible White Man movies fucks it up. Like I care way less about getting credit and way more about people
just being right,
taking it and being like, well, are there any Impossible Woman movies? Like, that's not how this works.
No.
Are there any Impossible Black Man movies? All Impossible White Man movies are Impossible White Man, regardless of who stars in
race,
it.
Race, gender, we don't care.
Yeah, it's a genre of movie. It can star a white woman. It can star an Asian dude. It can star a black man. It literally doesn't matter who's starring. It's just, do you hit the same stupid ass tropes that every other Impossible White Man movie hits?
I think people can't grasp their concept around it, and all of a sudden everything has to be these subsections. You go, no, it don't matter. It's all Impossible White Man.
But anyway, it doesn't bother me. But anyway, I saw this movie, and the problem is Bourne doesn't get really impossible until the last like 30 minutes, which leads you to like this hour and 20 minutes, hour and a half of like a supposed spy thriller. But we've seen him do everything that we see him do before, except with way less kicking ass, man. Like, we don't get close quarters combat until the end. We don't get like any shootouts until the end. Like, it's just like, why the fuck did I have to wait this long for you guys to fuck up Vegas? And then like the last action set piece happens in Vegas, and it's such a loud, explosive, collateral damage, like terrorist attack on a city. It's not an actual terrorist attack, but I'm saying if we in real life, it would have been perceived as a terrorist attack. Like that many people had to have died. And it's like, that doesn't fit with anything that happened in any of the other movies. Like all the other movies were these like, well, the American people will never know what happened here. You know what I'm saying? And this movie was just like, fuck it, blow up Vegas, bitch. Boom, we blowing up casinos. We fucking driving through cars with a fucking SWAT truck, like shooting, like, you know, shotgun shootouts in the middle of the night in Vegas. And, you know, in an age with cell phones and technology and social media, it's just like, oh, you guys have lost the entire plot, man. I was so let down by that movie, man.
And I know I was debating about going to see it, but he, I don't know, he on my I don't know about you no more list because, you know, particularly that Green Light, Green Room, whatever he did, I got in my feelings. I took that shit personal. I'm almost on a fuck you dude because I'm like, nah.
Well, you called it right this time. I didn't listen. And I tried to give the white man a second chance, and he was wrong. All right, let's talk about.
Oh, well, before we go on, I don't know if I should feel like that or not, but I really do feel like that about that dude because I was like, and then he got that new movie coming in where he the white man savior. Don't y'all know we tired of them movies?
Oh, the movie The Great Wall.
Yeah,
where he's the white only white dude in Asia, and they're gonna fight some monsters.
You know what I think, and I had this discussion, and it's making me think about Matt Damon.
Mm-hmm.
I've called Tom Cruise, and I'm not alone in this, but I've been very vocal in calling Tom Cruise the greatest movie star of all time. I think when you factor in quality of movies, longevity of career, the fact that he's had hit movies in four different decades, the fact that he still looks like he's 39.
Yes.
And the fact that even when he's had scandal, Scientology, the shit when he was yelling at Brooke Shields about her antidepressants, he weathers that shit and just comes back with a new hit movie.
Mm.
And somebody said to me, they were like, people always think I'm saying like he's the greatest actor of all time. I'm like, no, just the best movie star.
Right.
Good actor, but great movie star. And they said, could Matt Damon challenge him one day? Because they were thinking about somebody who might, if they keep at it long enough. And I thought, Matt Damon could have been on that pace.
Yeah.
Right.
But, and then he did this movie that looks like The Last Samurai 2. And I was like, is he trying to literally copy his career? Because that shit won't work anymore. You can't do.
I'm wondering if Matt Damon has some money problems because he said something a long time ago that he wasn't going to do any more Bourne films, but he wouldn't rule it all the way out because he'd keep it in his back pocket if he ever needed some money. And then he did this film and I'm like, man, maybe some of these independent projects aren't turning out the way that he thought they were. You know, he's no Ben Affleck, man. Like, Ben is, say what you want to think about Ben, but, my man Ben, consistently gets, you know, awards, praise, and makes money at the box office. And Matt's had a couple, critical failures and then, some critical successes that just didn't make a ton of money. So. I don't know, he should have hopped on that DC train when he had a chance.
Oh, they offered him a part?
Yeah, he's been offered parts before for comic book characters and shit, but he said he never done it before. And he said he would do it for Ben Affleck, who's going to be directing the new Batman movie. But he said Ben casted himself as Batman, so now he don't want to do it.
That's not the only role. I hope you know that, right?
It don't matter.
Damon is kind of stuck because he's like in between DiCaprio and Tom Cruise in terms of his career. Like DiCaprio is just like, no, I'm going to be known as the great actor of my time because I just try to do high end quality, big directors, Oscar type movies. And Matt Damon's like, well, I can't beat him on that game. So I'm going to try and do the Tom Cruise game,
mm-hmm.
but he's kind of slipping now. Cause think about how successful Matt Damon's been. Good Will Hunting was 98, so he's had a good run.
Yeah.
Now double his run, and that's Tom Cruise's career.
Yeah. I mean, I like me some Matt Damon, but, you know, it's, even after his comments rubbed me the wrong way, like, I still kind of think he just fucked up as a white dude. It's like very hard to always say the right shit. And he didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. Mm-hmm. So. I was hoping that at least the Bourne movie could get him back on track, but I don't know. We'll see. All right, we have other news too. Speaking of comedy, are you watching HBO's Vice Principals?
I am.
All right. What do you think about it?
I thought the pilot was great. and I know you've posted, you and I think Chris also posted some articles about people finding the racial elements of the show uncomfortable. I'm just finding my problem with the show is I think the last two episodes have been weird. Do you know what I mean? Like the drugs, like the first episode, because to me, you can say, depending on how you feel, when I say Vice Principals is just Kenny Powers if he never played baseball. Now, some people might say, oh, no, he's got to do a different character. And I go, nope. If he's Mariano Rivera threw one pitch for the Yankees. He only had one pitch, and he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Danny McBride has his, like, redneck, arrogant, dumbass thing. And I felt like the first two episodes I was really liking, and then it just has started to get a little weird to me.
Okay. And Karen's not really even watching it. She's one of those people that, you know, I hit play on something, and she just walks out the room. Like, it's like I don't even know what she goes to do in the other room. It just, it's just she gets up and walks out. At any rate, I enjoy, you know, I enjoyed Kenny Powers. And I enjoy Vice Principals, but I think one of the issues that people were having is that Vice Principals is basically about two white dudes in the middle of, you know, nowhere, in the small town who think they're in line to be the next principal at this high school, and they both get passed over, and they get passed over for a black woman who's from Philly, who comes in, and Belinda Brown, you know, gets the job, and start, you know, and they basically start plotting against her and team up to try to like get her out of there so that they can compete for the principal job again. And within that construct, of course, this black woman, Belinda Brown, becomes like the foil or she's like the roadrunner to their Wile E. Coyote. And I love that element, you know, like this super competent black woman who's, you know, capable of coming in and running circles around these dudes, even though they're just throwing the entire fucking everything at her. And she, you know, and they don't make her like a flawless, perfect character. She's like a hard ass. She doesn't take any shit off of anybody. And the watching basically Danny McBride and Walton Goggins, who Walton Goggins is also this is my first time getting to see him just be funny, which is something that I've always wanted to just see, because I think he got to kind of do some of that with The Hateful Eight,
right?
But this is like the first time I've really seen him just kind of unleashed on comedy and nothing else. He doesn't have to do any serious scenes yet or anything. And man, I'm just enjoying the banter between them. I keep wondering how much of this shit is scripted, how much of this shit they're just saying out the cuff.
Right.
Danny McBride's ability to deliver very ridiculous statements with a straight face is unrivaled. Like, I don't know how everyone's not just breaking character and laughing every fucking scene. Yeah. Some of the things, like when they were going back and forth in like the second episode, and he just calls Lee's like sassy motherfucker. And like, I'm like, how many times did he have to do that before he didn't lose his shit? So anyway, some of the backlash to it, and this is one of the ones I read. I haven't read everything, but one of the backlash things I read was America does not need this right now. Oh, two white men trying to take down a black woman in a time like this is just inappropriate, and there's nothing funny about it. You know, with the rise of Trump and all this other shit and Black Lives Matter, this is the wrong time. And it was written by a white woman. And I was just like, it's like some overprotective bullshit. You know what I mean? The actress herself, Kimberly Herbert Gregory, did an interview about this, and it was written about in the Vanity Fair. But to me, I've always taken the subtext of the entire arc so far to be white male entitlement getting pushed against from, you know, a competent black woman that has always probably her entire existence has been people telling her she can't do shit.
Right.
And watching them basically spaz and freak the fuck out, you know, just like the, you right. know, obviously it's hyperbolic for comedy's sake,
right?
But it's, you know, their being ridiculous is essentially the point of this, and the joke to me is on them, not on her at any point. Like she, like right. she may do things that are funny or fucked up and you can laugh at it, but the joke hasn't been, these guys are right, she needs to go. And some of the subtle shit is, in my opinion, kind of brilliant. It's almost like Squidbillies. Like some of the subtle shit okay. they're doing, like the fact that they keep referring to her like she's like this huge overweight woman, you know what I mean, where they're just like her big old butt, and you like, you know what, black women have to go through that shit, like right. like right. the coded language of like they're not gonna call her the N-word, they're not gonna just come out and say it, but you know, just
she went to Berkeley.
Yeah.
And I'm affirmative on how she got in there.
Right, exactly. Oh.
Even, that's a good one.
Even the like B, even the B sounds in her name and the way they emphasize big old Belinda Brown and shit like that. It's so fucking good. Like I can't stop crying at just the laughing at how ridiculous it is, because I think in a, you know, especially like in, and you probably can relate to this somewhere in the comedy world. Like white dudes can be the biggest fucking crybabies, you know what I mean? Like where it's kind of like, oh, they're fans for shit that's not me. Well, that's what's wrong with comedy, you know what I mean? Like fuck comedy, they got why they got to get a black dude to do that? You know, they just needed a black dude to do that. It's not like he's funny or anything. It's just like, well, you know, maybe you're not the best, or maybe there's a reason you got skipped over and it's not someone else's fault, you know what I mean? And I think that being able to make that sort of joke and commentary within this Vice Principals storyline is actually really funny. So yeah, she had basically said that this is like a lot of black women's reality. So she said, I think episode 4 is that moment where she's like, either you're going to burn in the ashes or you're going to go, or you're going to Phoenix. And this is her Phoenix moment. And that was when, they basically, she had a whole lot of setbacks. Like they burned her house down, guys. Like I was laughing and I was like, I think this is a hate crime. Like, I was like, this is like a hate crime. This shit escalated so fast.
That Walton Goggins is like going to be the villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they've shown you that Danny McBride's character has a conscience.
Yeah, Walton Goggins has none.
Walton Goggins just, because Walton Goggins, I think, is just a sassy gay closeted gay dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the way they're playing it. I was laughing with my girlfriend because when his like kind of little Asian wife came in, I said, "That's been my theory.
Right.
And that's not me alone. But if you got some ironing board Asian chick,
yeah."
And you're wearing your silk pajama bottoms and talking like this, and how are you doing? It's like, yeah, this is you're like close to a boy. You're trying to like have sex with kind of like a boy where society still calls you heterosexual.
I will be interested to see where they take that. What I thought was funny about it was that he has this mother-in-law that he fucking hates. And we learn in that scene that he gets his revenge by spitting in her drinks and shit.
Aww.
Like, and serving it to her with a smile. And you just see how fucked up he is.
Yeah.
And how sinister he can be. And Danny McBride is, whenever that side of Lee comes out, Neil Gambi is always looking at him like, the fuck is, what if I, like, should I be working with this dude?
Doing?
Yeah. You can't do that, motherfucker. Like, I love that shit. But yeah, so Gregory goes on to say that I've been fascinated by that response, the one where it's like they shouldn't have a premise of a white guy's fighting with a black woman over her job. And she said, I've been so fascinated by that response. I feel like particularly as a woman of color, being the only one in a space is not novel, right? Competing against white men for something is not novel. I've never looked at the show as racist. I've just looked at it as, okay, that's how it is. She says, While she specialized in theater in high school, she's also had a bachelor's in psychology and a master's in social work. I have always had this interest in identity development. I did my thesis on racial identity development at a predominantly white institution. I was really digging deep into race and gender identity. I wanted to go into tough neighborhoods and talk to people who may not see the benefit of mental health. I was like, I'm going to like save the world. While living in Chicago for her master's though, she was drawn back into theater and the rest is history. So like, this is also real life experience, not just like as an actress, but like in these very white spaces where mm-hmm. she's become accomplished. And I think that informs not just the character and the role, but you know, how like the reality of the story. And I don't think you should not be able to have poke fun at something because it's a reality. Like that's actually right. why it's funny, you know, right. in my opinion. So yeah, she also notes that putting a black female body in a space where people aren't necessarily used to seeing a woman of color can prompt a knee-jerk response. I don't think we would respond in the exact same way if Melissa McCarthy was the principal and they did the exact same thing to her. As a nation, as viewers, and as an industry, we have to be ready to accept black women specifically competing and maybe getting what appears to be attacked by white men. That to me is casting equality. The other thing too was this reminds me of this article that when Ryan Coogler got the job to do Black Panther, mm-hmm. this white woman wrote this really fucking like overprotective, like I don't think he should take this job because he does such good independent films. He should just kind of stick to that rather than to let corporate money and corporate America take over his thing with this budget and all this creative control that you have to give up when you're working for Marvel. And I'm like, so the end result is that no black people ever get money. Like the end result is still the same. Like, now it's almost
requiring extra nobility.
Yeah,
like he must maintain complete purity. It's like he can't go get a $20 million paycheck.
As if there's something not noble in the fact that a black person would get that check. By the way, like okay. like oh that's no that kind of money should only go to white people. Like right. come on, that we don't right. want to taint you with this right. access to money and power. Keeping in mind, you take that kind of money and you put it into things where you continue to make vehicles that you don't have to kiss anybody's ass for after that. Even with Marvel, he's over there getting his people on. Michael B. Jordan's in this joint. Like Tessa Thompson got on with Thor. Like you can't tell me Ryan Coogler's not wielding that influence of being on the inside and funneling that money to everybody. But it's these really overprotective white people, a lot of times women, that come through and write this shit and you're like, yeah, that's not the reality that we as black people experience at all.
And a lot of times at the bottom line, what about me? Mm. Like you literally take whatever it is, spin it and make it about you.
Right.
Whatever it is, it's about you. Nobody gave a fuck and nobody asked your opinion about this because it actually don't affect you at all.
Right.
But you feel like you have to come in and you obligated to say something because the scenario is not about you.
It's also interesting too because I think white women have yet to really understand that their struggle, while it is a struggle, it is. You know, they still deal with shit.
Mm-hmm.
They deal with a different type of struggle than other people.
Right.
So it's like, your struggle is like, I don't want to be sexualized. Like, why you gotta look at my titties? Y'all been looking at my titties for years. And then there's some people whose struggle is like, y'all never consider me a sexual creature. You right. guys think I'm a fucking, like I might as well be invisible out right. here. It's just different people have different struggles and you can't just address everything with a broad brush. But anyway, I thought that controversy was, as a comedy thing, was pretty interesting.
I think my sixth album is going to be called Woke White Women.
Some white woman's going to have that before you get to it.
Like, sometimes they can be the most annoying people on earth.
Oh man, it really is.
Even like, when it's not something as big as like I'm saying, just when you read between the lines, and I like sometimes I can't help it, but I'll see some comment on Facebook that's right. like, I can't help it. I roll my eyes. Even right. if it's something like on point, I kind of do like, a you agree. Viral. Like, when yeah. are we going to protect our black brothers? It's like, oh boy.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
even though I know there's nothing wrong with what they're right. saying, I'm just like, something, I don't know why this just kind of annoys me a little bit.
That, well, is I think that's just how society is too. Cause like, there's times where I'm just like, yo, what, like, I read an article and I'm like, yo, what is going on with this gay issue or this part where they're like persecuting this person or whatever? It's so fucked up. And, you know, or like I live in North Carolina. I don't know any trans people in person in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Like, my living, I mean, and that's not really saying much. We don't even know the numbers on how many people are, and it's not right. The census or anything, but right. Like, but I do know that it feels wrong to tell somebody you can't just fucking use the bathroom right. For the gender you identify right. as.
Well, especially, and I say this on the album, so I, pardon me for jumping in, but it's because it's what's kind of unfortunate about that is that the law was a blatant attempt to basically say F you.
Right. Yeah. Like,
this wasn't a problem, but it became an issue nationally. So you decided we're going to let them know whatever you've been doing that hasn't been a problem. We just want to let you know we don't like you.
And even the opposition to it is such hyperbolic lies. Like, it's, here's a dude wearing a thong with his dick out looking at a child sucking on an ice cream cone. You want to let him in the
album cover, man.
And it's on the bottom, it says Israeli tortoise. And nah, but it's like, you know, you're going to let him in the bathroom with your daughter or whatever the fuck. And it's just like, you can't even win on the issue. Like, you couldn't even tell the truth of what's happening and win with that. Like, you couldn't take a picture of, you know, a person who is passing, quote unquote, whatever their gender identity is, and be like, you can't let this person in the bathroom. Look at you. You gonna let Laverne Cox in the bathroom with a little girl? Cause people would be like, yes. What would be wrong with that? You know what I mean? Like, most people would just go, it would actually look weird to me to see Laverne Cox walking into a male bathroom. But that's the reality of what they're actually talking about, but not the reality of what they're, you know, telling everybody on these memes and shit. So yeah, I'm sure there's some people that see me talking about that and they roll their eyes or they feel like a little bit, whatever, like, this motherfucker again or something. But yeah, that's just the cost of it. There's always gonna be animosity, even from people within the group that are like, I don't want you talking about this shit. The problem to me is more when people don't listen and they have decided that this is the way things are, when there's so many people out here who are already speaking for themselves that you could be listening to and like signal boosting, or, you know, telling, you know, like, here's an article from the perspective of somebody that's going through this shit and this is why it's wrong, you know.
Sure.
At any rate, you know, it's a difference between like advocacy and centering yourself in the middle of somebody's cause. I think that's the difference.
Well, now, here, I have a question for you, because I'm actually at the end of the month, I'm going to be back at that club in Raleigh.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, you know, that gig doesn't pay. I mean, it's a fun gig, and it doesn't pay a lot of money.
Yeah.
So what if I start protesting, like, I'm not going to do my feature set because of the law? Like, that, I will get like $1 million worth of PR for giving up a $500 gig.
Well, this is my theory for if I was an NBA player.
Have you mentioned this about Carmelo Anthony also?
I don't know if it was about Melo, but we read an article that was about, you know, people saying the Black Lives Matter thing. And I think it was right after they did a speech at the ESPYs. And I was like, if I was any of those dudes, it, like, especially like LeBron, Chris Paul, like the guys who have gotten a gold already, they do not want to go to the shit show that is Rio. Right. Just lie and be like, I'm not going until all Black Lives Matter. And you'll get all the fucking credit. People will be like, that dude is so brave. He's taking he's the new Muhammad Ali. That dude took a stand in an unpopular time, and really you're just like at home resting your knees and shit. But you sound
I think
so good.
I retweeted that when you tweeted it or something.
You gotta do it, right? You gotta do it. I don't know how you don't do it.
Well, Melo, see, my thing is with Melo, I feel like he's like, I'm never gonna win a title. So now I'm trying to carve out all the other Hall of Fame parts. Like, I'm going to become an activist. Now, this motherfucker isn't doing anything. I mean, he may be doing some things on the side. I don't know. I can't speak, like, what he actually is doing. But I love how everybody was like, maybe they'll take a stand at Rio when they win the gold. And I tweeted an article today from the Daily News where he was like, no, I'm thinking I think we need to bring people together, not separate. And I was like, oh, this dude's going to wear an All Lives Matter shirt on the gold stand. How quickly he's going to go from like, you know, because he's getting all this credit. Like, he's going to end up winning like 10. He's just going to keep doing the Olympics every 4 years so that like when he retires, they're like, he's the only guy with 5 gold medals. That's kind of like a title, right? No? Those don't count like a title? I have more gold medals than Michael Jordan, so I guess I belong in the conversation.
Oh, that's so fucked up.
We need to do something about black lives being cut short.
Yeah, hey.
Now, I didn't do anything about it, but I said it.
I said it. I brought it up.
So I'm an activist and an Olympian, the most decorated male basketball Olympian of all time. Where's my Hall of Fame plaque with my 0 finals appearances?
I really just wish I could have been in the room when Michael Jordan heard him say it's about time, when he was referring to Jordan's activism, and Melo was like, yeah, I just feel like it's about time. And I was like, oh shit. Oh, I wish I could have been sitting with Mike sipping on some vodka or some shit, and watching his face curl up at that mere, at the implication that any NBA player was better than him at something. Also, speaking of the Olympics, Leslie Jones has been on Twitter posting videos of her reactions to every sport, like rocking like the all red, white, and blue outfit, draped herself in the flag.
Oh,
yeah, just cheering for the Olympics, which is kind of amazing because, you know, it wasn't too long, she was almost driven off of Twitter,
right?
And so she's just been like, you know, USA, USA all day. And so she got invited to Rio by NBC to actually do some, you know, some coverage of the events, which is...
I think I see one or two of them. And she'd be so excited. I mean, like, you can tell she has a joy, and it comes across in her little snippets that she put out there.
Yeah. Yeah, she... Like, here's one where it was swimming, and it was for, I think, the backstroke competition. Let me see if I can...
Looking for that good stuff. Da, 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 da. Why don't you tighten up on that backstroke?
Go
USA.
Oh, did you put it on a share screen?
Oh, well, that one's not even her. It's just her. It's just the event she's talking. Like, oh, okay. It's not her looking in the camera doing anything. She just plays the event and then she does like the audio.
Oh, okay.
And celebrates and whatnot. You know, which is interesting because it's twofold. One, the Olympics has a lot more viewership than a lot of sporting events.
True.
Like, I want to say it hit 37 million people or something Sunday.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people watch it.
Yeah, and particularly a lot of women watch it.
Yes, they do.
And it's one of the few events where women get to be involved and celebrate it.
And they dominate, like, for the first time. You do women and men, but, like, you can actually see women's volleyball, women's gymnastics, women tennis. And it's one of the few times where women can be praised. And you're still gonna have fuck people, but they can just enjoy themselves without people coming and just poo-pooing on their party just because.
Well, you're on the screen.
Right.
I mean, it's not, and unlike, and it's an event, like it's celebrated, unlike, say the WNBA where it almost has to become
I'm sorry. I thought that was my cue.
Oh, no, not yet, Dale, not yet. Where it becomes like a cause. True. Like, the only people watching the NBA are people who truly enjoy it, or you're like, I'm gonna prove something to people at this point. Like, it's like there's no real in between because it's not celebrated as an event. It's not really given the rah-rah-rah of a lot of men's sporting events, which is like, because like there's so many people that don't watch football but they watch the Super Bowl.
True.
Because it's an event, you know. There's so many people I know that don't know shit about college basketball. Mm-mm. They still fill out a tournament bracket, and they still go take the day off and watch go to the bar and watch March Madness.
They're excited about the Final Four weekend.
Yeah, like in the World Cup. There's so many people that don't fucking know or care that much about soccer.
I'm one of them.
Yeah, no offense to people that do. Mm-hmm. I'm one of them. But the World Cup comes around, it's like I put on my fucking Uncle Sam hat, mm-hmm. and I get my flag out.
As Lebatard said, man, patriotism plus sports is like, a unique combination.
And yeah, and then when you add on top of that the fact that we have like women being represented in it too, it just adds, it compounds to the thing. So I think Leslie, much like most of my timeline, you know, and I follow a lot of women and stuff, that a lot of black women that, you know, hey, Simone Biles is competing in gymnastics, it's 11 o'clock on a Sunday,
your timeline,
I'm dropping what I'm doing and I'm fucking watching that shit. And you can't really like take that away from people. And I think that she's going through the same unbridled joy as everybody else, and she's kind of getting rewarded for it via social media and all the people retweeting and all the people that have enjoyed it. And now she's going to Rio for it, so more power to her.
Gymnastics is tough for me because I'm amazed. I mean, men and women, but obviously the women, I just, what they've managed to do with their bodies at a young age in terms of just, they turn into like action heroes, like little 4'11" action heroes. And also I have a problem because now it used to be safe. It'd be like some 16-year-old built like an 11-year-old. But now you got these like 19-year-olds and you can see the breasts are being like repressed, but they're still starting to come. But yet they have these super muscular toned bodies and they're doing, and then I start going, please, okay, she's 20. Good.
Yeah.
Because I start feeling like, am I coming to a child? And why is this child so hot? Oh, good. This child is actually a woman and she's 20. Then why does she look like a built up 16-year-old?
Yeah, it's like
a lot of, just
I feel you going, are you aged out? Like, I don't understand this concept.
Yeah, there was a picture of Gabby with her boyfriend, and her boyfriend's a Brazilian dude who's 22. He's like a gymnast as well, or I think he's a gymnast. But anyway, that's her boyfriend. And like, I just posted the article. It was like, oh, this is Gabby's boyfriend and they're together and they look so cute. You know, that was basically what the article was. Within two or three comments, one lady was like, so I just want to know, how old is she? Because he's 22. And then someone had to come through and be like, she's 19. She's like, okay, all right, okay, 19, yeah, 22. Because it's like the assumption is almost like, what is she, like a 16-year-old gymnast or something? Like, we don't really know the rules. The shit only comes up once every 4 years.
We don't know if they growth is stunning. I have no idea what's happening.
Right. But it is interesting because the age thing matters. And then they have one gymnast that was 41 years old out there going, and I want to say this is like her like 7th Olympics or some shit.
41, yeah. And she's still that flexible? Like, goddamn. Like,
I mean, the dedication is a dedication. I mean, their body is their tool.
Brazil, her talents will be utilized in Brazil.
Yeah. Well, also their body is their, that's their tool, like,
right, so they constantly,
their bodies do look a certain way, their bodies will, I mean, you do anything enough, I mean, we don't question when I mean, we do, but when fucking Mark McGuire was walking around looking like a He-Man action figure, we didn't start questioning like, well, what are the long-term effects on, like, will he be able to get a woman or anything, like, what happens with his penis, you know, like, we didn't start questioning that kind of shit until it was like steroids, you know what I mean? But we don't really give a fuck when it comes to dudes doing it. So but yeah, it is, it has been interesting to see. And yeah, her unbridled enthusiasm, as now, I don't know if NBC watched the videos, because I feel like they're gonna have to take a lot of the cussing out. Like, I don't know how many of these videos they watched, but it was a lot of like, come on, motherfucker, you got, you know, because it's still Leslie Jones.
You can have her across your ears.
This Leslie Jones shit has been amazing to me for everyone that didn't follow her career for the last, you know, 20 years or however long, like,
she's hilarious.
You know, she's like 48, 49 or something. But for most people, she's come into being in their minds in like the last 6 months. So to them, it's like, we can put a lot of pressure on her and make her change herself and dial it down and not just like,
right. She's like, bitch, I'm grown. What are y'all talking about? I've been doing this for a long time. Yeah. I'm not going to change.
I'm going to be here.
Yep. Ain't going nowhere.
All right, let's see what else is happening.
I had to keep quiet, like, see, because I like Leslie Jones, but I didn't like Lady Ghostbusters.
Yeah, so you, I was just hating,
stayed out of everything because I didn't want to. Once that whole blew up, because I was getting a lot of hits on my review, which goes to show you, people can act like, J.O., you're too negative, and then when they think I'm putting up a review where I'm going to bash something, the clicks go up. So it's like, the market is telling me they like it when I hate.
Well, that's true. Also, though, how many of those clicks are just from the same people who made Ghostbusters trailer the worst voted trailer on YouTube?
Right.
Yeah. Like, you might have hit an intersection there of like MRA assholes who are like, cool, another bro hating on these fucking bitches and their Ghostbusting equipment. And then like, they listen to like,
other than Quentin Tarantino movies though, the biggest movie review I had in terms of hits was Trainwreck, the Amy Schumer movie, because all these people in comedy were like, oh, I'm afraid to say anything, but I bet JL fucking shit all over it. And I didn't. I said I liked it. So I'm sure people were like, fuck that, man.
They were disappointed in you.
Saying that because you did a bringer show with her 8 years ago.
Yeah.
It's an ass.
Corporate shield, JL.
I had to like stop. I was going to share the review. And then when the shift came out with her, I was like, I'm just going to have to take an L on this one. I don't want to have to be like associated with that because I didn't like the movie. So I was like, it's okay. Okay. We'll stop sharing the review because I don't want all that garbage like kind of touching my non-insulting Leslie Jones review.
Right. So. Well, what's funny is that I'm the opposite where I like shit. And sometimes people come down on it so hard. I'm just like, I'm not even gonna tell anybody I like this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's gonna, be a problem. You know, I like Vice Principals. I like Leslie Jones. I like, certain people stand up and shit. Or because I do like this thing and people are like, I don't like this. It's problematic or it's terrible. Sometimes I'll just be like, I'm not even gonna fucking talk about that I like this, you know, like I don't watch it anymore because it's just been too long, but I like Tosh.0 first two or three seasons. Like, I thought it was really funny, but at the same time, I don't want to fucking argue about it. Like, right. I don't know what can be gained from arguing over subjective shit, like what's funny and what's not, because nobody ever changes their minds. Like, no one's ever presented me anything that made me go, and now this thing that I thought was good is not entertaining to me anymore. You know, like, I listen to you and Josh Homer go in on Key and Peele, show, and it like added a perspective that I hadn't thought about with the show.
Yeah.
And even still, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna be watching next season because the shit was funny to me. Like, I can't make it not funny, you know?
Yeah.
And the same way, I can't make it funny to you. Like, there's nothing I can say to be like, now JL, it's gonna be good now that I told you I like it. He's like, no, it's not. I fucking don't like that shit.
Oh, by the way, quick update. My album is up to 27 on the comedy chart.
Already.
For tomorrow's boost. So good job, people. Whoever the 9 people who bought it in the last, you know, hour are.
That's what I'm talking about, dog. Get that bump. Rebel Wilson, comedian, as JL would call her. Comedian, as I would call her. Rebel Wilson got in some trouble on social media, guys.
A stupid question. Who is this?
She is a comedian and actress.
A big blonde New Zealand or Australian woman. She was in Pitch Perfect.
Okay. Karen hasn't seen any of her movies. I guarantee that. Here's her picture. I'll put it on the screen for you, Karen. That's Rebel Wilson. You probably don't know her from anything because you wouldn't watch. Karen just sees two white people on screen and walks out. Like, that's pretty much Karen's entire viewing of anything. Like, anything you name that had more than like two white people in it, she ain't watched it, y'all. Like, even it doesn't matter how acclaimed it is, The Wire, Breaking Bad, fucking like anytime I put something on, it's got two white people in it, she's like, oh, two white people talking to each other, so I ain't gotta watch this.
That's my bias on some shit. I'm sorry, y'all. My world outside of this is extremely white. So I was like, you know what? I get to pick and choose my fucking entertainment. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. People wonder how I'm able to just like not argue about entertainment all the time. That's how. I can't convince Karen. How I'm going to convince you, stranger on the internet? Rebel Wilson got in trouble because she went on Twitter to air her frustrations out about her single life. Now, she recently said she broke up with her boyfriend because she needs to pursue her career and he was messing up her focus, okay? So she's single by choice, according to her, all right? So she went on Twitter and said, why do guys always go for those bikini-clad vapid skanks and not the smart, successful Australian girls? With two question marks. And her 2.6 million followers had to let her know that was pretty slut-shaming. That's pretty bad. Yeah. Yeah, JL. Your favorite words.
Mm-hmm. Is this where I offer my opinion?
Yeah, I mean, do you want to hear the comments first that the people wrote in?
Sure,
or you just
sure.
Okay. All right, so one person said, why do girls feel the need to slut shame others? It's not nice, Rebel. Another person said, calling other women skanks isn't cool, Rebel. Be better than slut shaming. A person said, slut shaming and being body negative to another group of girls isn't going to change anything. Come on. Another person said, so much for the sisterhood. Go ahead, JL. What were you going to say, man?
Well, this comes off nicely from my new segment, Moment of Winter, on my podcast, where I talk about Ariel Winter, the very busty girl from Modern Family, who anytime some bro says they want to bang her, she starts calling that slut shaming and body shaming. Like, she just likes to throw the terms out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, that dress is very revealing of your breasts at your, you know, sister's wedding. It's like, don't body shame me. I feel like that's people, like, Rebel Wilson, first off, I don't know if she's hurt, like, if her feelings are hurt, if her boyfriend is, like, you know, seeing some trashy chick or who might appear trashy or something. But obviously there's a little bit of a joke in it when she goes, why won't they go for the smart, sexy Australian women?
Right.
So it's already, like, half a joke there.
Right. I thought it was, it to me, it sounded like it was a joke. And then in 2010, you could put that on Twitter and right. probably be okay. But sensibilities have changed. And
but this is one of those things that I read. And I don't want to sound like Corolla, but it's what this is the kind
can
of
you
thing
at least do it in his. Can you at least do it in his voice if you're going to sound like him?
Well, now, this is where everybody just has to say they're a fucking victim. You know? Oh, I'm sorry. You're a hot chick in a bikini. Has life been so bad for you? So now you've got to go on Twitter and pretend to be a victim? Fuck off. but, right? Like, it feels like that. It's like she's not calling out anyone individually. Like, she's not, like, saying, you skank, look at how you're dressed. We all kind of know what she's saying. And implied in that is not an idea of, like, body shame. It's like she's literally talking about women who obviously look physically better than her.
Right.
So, like, the idea of saying that that's shaming is a real stretch of the word shame.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we're all honest with ourselves, we all know the chick who puts on a low top, smashes the titties into the profile pic, and, like, takes the selfie, and then makes, like, some lame joke and expects the likes to come in for the joke and not the tits?
Mm-hmm.
Come on. This is one of those things where, like, if you want to, like, ignore reality, you can pretend to be hurt.
Yeah.
But, like, were any of these people commenting really, like, feeling offended? Or were they just kind of like, she said some words that, you know, if she was talking about an individual woman, I could get that. But as a general concept, she's, A, I think, kind of joking, and B, we sort of know what she's talking about without having to get offended.
Well, she may have been talking about a specific woman.
Right.
We don't know. You know what I'm saying? Is that that time, remember when,
believe me, I don't what like defending a woman in comedy.
Well,
okay?
obviously. Well, it's not like, I mean, you said it was a joke, but you didn't say it was funny. So you're sticking to your brand. What is Steph Curry's wife? Aisha?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When Aisha Curry said that stuff about women not having enough clothes, and it definitely was, you know, slut shaming, quote unquote, or, you know, put on some clothes. You're not classy like me. But in my mind, I was just like, obviously some woman has tried to hit up Steph. Like, I don't know who it is. Just there's some woman out there that ain't got no clothes on that she specifically tried to act classy and be like, I was reading a magazine. No, you weren't. You were on Instagram or something. Like, you saw
Snapchat.
The shit that people must be sending your husband. I guarantee you were like, man, fuck those girls. I can't believe this shit. And I gotta say something about it without, like, completely coming out of character and being like, Mala, don't look at my man. But she was able to kind of slide it through on some, like, whatever, and she ended up becoming the face of slut shaming on Twitter. Like, every dude that hates women was like, why can't I just get me a Aisha Curry?
Yeah, until she started speaking, and then yeah. It was like, bitch, go somewhere and shut up.
Yeah, you got other opinions? Like, I thought you was just gonna be talking about these other women not being shit. That's my job, having all the opinions. And then for Rebel, part of me does wonder how much of this is in the hierarchy of body positivity and stuff, people feeling betrayed because they're like, I've let you slide on being fat,
right?
And I never said anything, and now you want to come out and say something negative about a group of people? Well, that's not gonna get you anywhere, you know. Like we're the ones who are holding back. One person even said being negative to another group of girls, which was like, cause you're in the other group.
Yeah.
The group of people that they don't, aren't, wearing a bikinis and being sexy.
Yeah. She might as well end that with quote unquote, your big bitch.
Yeah. But even with all that said, what she said was, kind of predictably, gonna be, inflammatory. Doesn't,
right.
Like, and I don't know how you even say that in 2016 and don't expect the backlash. It's just a matter of, can she live
especially
with the backlash?
2.6
or not?
Million followers, like,
right?
Somebody,
0.01 of them will be sensitive Twitter trolling, like,
yeah.
Police,
right?
I got to admit, I slut shame some of my neighbors,
mm-hmm.
Predictably, but there are these three women who live in my building. I think they're on the 9th floor or 10th floor, but every night, and we're not talking, we're talking the main nights for like celebrities, like Monday through Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
They go out dressed like they are looking to pick up men on a street corner,
mm-hmm.
at like 10:30 every night, like Monday through Wednesday or Monday through Thursday. And then I just had a look with another dude in my building, and we just looked and we made eye contact, and it was just like, sluts.
Mm.
We didn't even have to say it.
But
spoke it with our eyes.
But then
the doorman suggested that maybe they might be. There was like a 20% chance that they might be working.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Making
too.
Making money.
Which
would then kind of make them, which wouldn't make them sluts, it would make them whores.
Well, that's true too, but how old are they?
Entrepreneurs.
How old do you think they are?
Like, you know, mid-20s.
Yeah, see, I think... That I have
prime Manhattan real estate.
I have a completely different take on that, because, like, I've seen pictures of mid-20s JL, and you were a smoke show, my man. Like, you were putting the guns out there... You know, the pictures.
Looking like a GQ model, right?
Yeah, the pictures the pictures on the website, you know.
I
couple
went out to bars like the dude from Tonga, the Marshall. With shorts
shiny.
And oil.
Yeah, I mean, like I've seen, you know, Prime JL, and I feel like this is a little bit of you kind of coming down on, you know, a little jealousy of these ladies being in their prime, strutting their stuff the way you used to get down, man. I mean, the shirts used to be a little tighter, you know what I'm saying? Used to be, you know.
Let me tell you something. 2017, I'm bringing the tight shirts back, whether I'm in shape or not. Now, I'm going to try and get back in shape. I'm going to try and finish this 6-year project I'm on. But goddamn it, if you're either going to see, you know, The Rock Jr. or Philip Seymour Hoffman in Boogie Nights. Either way, I'm wearing tight shirts.
You gonna be out there like Michael Chiklis in The Shield?
Man, did they try to make that dude look jacked, but then every so often you'd be like, this is a little pudgy short dude.
Like, I would fuck
me. To make him look like a tough, like he could kick ass. And you're like, this guy's a little pudge.
I would fuck Vic Mackey up, dog. Like, I would beat the shit out of that little dude. Hey, my favorite thing is that the way that they made him stay intimidating was by making his villains even chubbier black dudes. It was like Forrest Whitaker and Anthony Anderson.
Vic Mackey, is pushing in your mouth. Can you taste it? It tastes like piss.
That is my limited but very proud Forrest Whitaker impression.
Oh God. Oh man. But yeah, at any rate, I mean, that, yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry to break off topic. Mm-hmm. We'll get back to me in tight shirts in
yes.
a second. But man, do I still feel bad for Forrest Whitaker in that season.
Yeah, man. He got played. He was right. You know,
he got played in every way. Vic Mackey like banged his ex-wife.
Jesus, they just
and then he made him look crazy, and he was right the whole time. And everybody was like, just we can't do, there's nothing we can do.
Yeah. Everyone's like, yeah, we know he's dirty. He's just really hard to catch. That's the point. He's like, but how could you do this? And they're like, yeah, that's the thing.
In your mouth. It tastes shit. It tastes like piss.
I'm sorry. I want to go to like an acting audition. And I want that to be my monologue. Like, people will be taking, like, excerpts out of famous plays or, like, movie. And I'll be like, I'm playing a one-eyed, sad, black internal affairs officer.
He's missing in your mouth!
I wonder what the cross-section of people that know that scene the way I do and listen to the show are. There's like 10.
I will get 3 to 4 tweets. We will know because those will be the only people tweeting about it. So, like, yeah. 2 to 3 people will be like, that shit had me rolling. Everybody will be like, I didn't watch the Shield.
Karen didn't watch. You can see she's already like, all right, that must be funny. But I saw Walter Goggins and Walton Goggins and Michael Chiklis talking to each other. Not too down.
Right. That's that bald headed white man.
Yeah, that's him.
And they had backup white men on that show. Like, you could walk
back
in,
up.
Like, it wouldn't be, they had backups in the chamber just in case it wasn't those two. It would be another two.
Lim, you know. Anyway, I do think that what she said was fucked up and
predictable
to get in trouble. Like, that's the fun. But the thing is, and this doesn't happen enough, if she don't care, then so what? Like, that's the thing that I always don't understand.
I don't care is always an option.
Yeah, all these controversies with comedians and shit, and then everyone gets up in arms about freedom of speech and all this shit. It's just like, well, if you just don't give a fuck, it'll go away. Like, they will never like you, for the record. And now that people have something on you, that's just how people are at this point. Like, no one ever forgives or lets shit go. You're always the person that fucked up, however you fucked up. So just don't apologize. Fuck it, you know? Like, ride it out. You're still Rebel Wilson and you're rich and you, like, nothing's gonna happen to you because of this shit. All right.
Yeah, attacking chicks in bikinis is not like a group that like has marches and can set up a protest.
Yeah. Like, maybe there'll be a slut walk or something, but I don't. Yeah. I doubt it.
And where will that be? And what time?
Yeah. Amber Rose will be there. But yeah, I feel like Prime JL is a little jealous of the lady strutting that stuff, man. And you know what?
But here's the. You know,
be
the
bigger than that.
Prime JL, here's the real truth about Prime JL, is that Prime JL put a ring on it with someone else, and then that faded. Like, so my Prime, my, like, what should have been my Miami Heat back-to-back NBA Finals years,
mm-hmm.
I was spending, like, you know, Blake Griffin on the Clippers.
Mm-hmm. Wasted that. You're like how Blake Griffin's going to feel at 35, you know what I mean? Like, Blake Griffin looks at Ben Simmons at 30. Blake Griffin's like 35. He's gonna be like, man, fuck Ben Simmons, man.
Put on a suit that's not so form-fitting.
Yeah.
You trash
slut fucker. Yeah. Take those goddamn capris off.
Not the capris. Not the hot waters.
Oh, man. JL, you ain't shit, man, but I love you, dude. I don't know. I don't know what to do with this. JL problematic, man. All right, so let's get into our other segments.
Okay.
Let's get into some fucking with black people. Karen, you watched the time, so I know to make a new section or whatever.
Okay.
Let me get my music out for fucking with black people. And here we go. We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people. That's right, guys. It's time for Fucking with Black People, the game that we all hate to play. Where we go around the globe, we get articles and stuff, and we read them, and we score from 0 to 100 intervals of 25 for how much we feel fucked with as black people. Today's contestants, everybody. And don't forget, Fucking with Black People brought to you by Loot Crate. Mm-hmm. Loot Crate is, of course, a monthly subscription service that's a mystery crate filled with exclusive items from the biggest and best pop culture franchises. Go to lootcrate.com/TBGWT and enter offer code TBGWT, and you get $3 off of any new subscription. August, you have to order by the 19th, or you won't get August's, you won't get the August theme, which is anti-heroes. So, you know, all the stuff. If you guys watched Suicide Squad and somehow enjoyed it, or just thought to yourself, man, they fucked these characters up, I'd do a better job if I had a box of stuff coming to me myself. Well, now you got a chance. lootcrate.com/TBGWT, code TBGWT. All right. So, you guys know who Kenya Barris is? Mm-hmm. He's the creator of Black-ish.
Okay.
He got interviewed by Deadline, and the title of this article in Vulture is Black-ish creator Kenya Barris is quote so tired of talking about diversity unquote. Now, I posted this on my page because I read the whole article and I said, read this article before saying something stupid in the comments.
Oh, you know that's not gonna happen. Well, reading
on my page they did.
Okay.
But it wouldn't have happened without that disclaimer. I'm sure of that.
Right.
So basically he was asked about diversity in this panel on Thursday, at TCA's panel on Thursday. And he said, I will be so happy when diversity is not a word. I have the best job in the world. I'm constantly having to talk about diversity. I have the best actors. This is ridiculous. It doesn't matter who's watching our show. The fact is that they're watching it. I get so tired of talking about diversity. These are amazing, talented actors and amazing writers who give their all, and they don't have to do this. It's crowding the conversation. Tracee Ellis Ross also chimed in, and she talked to the reporter who brought up the subject. And she says, is that a question that you've asked other shows that are not predominantly of a certain color?
Right.
Then the reporter answered, not really. As she said, those questions continue the conversation in a direction that does not help the conversation. Barris also noted the narrow fixation on Black-ish as part of the diversity conversation has denied the show its more universal qualities. He said, we always have to box everything in. Isn't it just a good family show? It's specifically about a Black family. We're not denying that, but don't you see yourself in it? Don't you see your family in it? Why is that important? Who watched the show? Why does it matter? Why do we keep having to have these conversations? Even if we keep having these conversations, it's clearly time to rethink who we go to for answers. So, 0 to 100, Karen, how fucked with are you on that one?
I'm not fucked with at all.
All right. What about you, JL?
Twenty-five.
All right, and what's your 25 for?
But it's sort of like par. The problem is, it's almost like par for the course.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, in a way, it's, I'm giving it a low score because I don't think it's particularly offensive or. But right. It's like, I felt like there. It was Tracee Ross who gave the lengthy answer, right? That you read.
Yeah. I think she gave the one in the middle. The one at the end was Kenya Barris again.
Oh well, it just makes it's like. The response is so strong that it sort of shuts it down.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think it was particularly offensive. But it's like it's hard to say because it's like this is the kind of question that always gets asked. So it's not like they were stepping out of the norm to ask it. But I think it was a great response.
Yeah. Karen, you're off camera, by the way. The other thing, too, though, is I don't think that it was asked maliciously or anything.
Right.
But it's like. How whenever we have a comedian on our show, if she's a woman, like if I would have asked every, like, how is it being a woman comedian? Like eventually it's like, all right, dog, I do 100 interviews and I get asked this, you know, every fucking one of them. Like at some point, I just don't want to fucking have to answer the same question. The same way, if you got asked every time we had you on the show, we were like, so you're half Black and you're half white, right? Why don't you go through that again? It's like, motherfucker, dog. Like,
right.
That can't be everything for me. So I kind of get the frustration. And I wish we had video of it because I doubt that they were said in like an angry way by from anyone. But I do feel a little fucked with just for the fact that the biggest part of that is they do not ask white shows about this shit.
Right.
And I do think it is imperative that those questions get asked of, if you're gonna ask them of the black people in the black shows who are actually doing diversity well already, you should basically have to ask these other shows. Like,
right,
there's no reason you can't ask the people from Modern Family the same shit. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. who's watching your show? What's the demographic? Are you concerned about diversity? Are you concerned about including people? Those are people that also have shows, and they, you know, maybe they'll tell you go fuck yourself, or maybe they'll be like, you know what, that's a good point, or this is what we're working on. You just never know if you don't ask. So I'm gonna go with 50 because I'm just a little bit fucked with, but
you could give some points to whoever came up with the title of the article.
That, yeah, now right? That like is 100.
The clickbait editor could get like 25 points.
How many people don't like Kenya Barris right now? Literally because they read a title and they didn't read. Like, how many people are just like, man, fuck Kenya Barris. I knew I didn't like that show. His name Blackish, first of all. And then second of all, this guy's tired of talking about diversity.
Somebody's yelling at him right now in LA going, fuck you and your All Lives Matter.
We were wrong. This is from the Daily News. We were wrong. Ending Stop and Frisk did not end stopping crime.
Did they pay somebody for the study?
Breaking news, y'all. Three years ago this month, Manhattan federal judge Shira Shinlin ruled unconstitutional the NYPD's program of stopping, questioning, and sometimes frisking people suspected of criminality. The third anniversary of the ruling, August 12th, presents an opportune moment to evaluate its consequences on the city after the passage of a reasonable amount of time. While her findings remain as flawed today as they were then, New York has come through to a brighter day. I like that they called her findings flawed. Even though basically the Daily News is about to tell you that they were wrong. Like, we said that crime was gonna go up and we need to be scared. And it was like, well, you were wrong about everything. Yeah, but her findings were terrible. Like, come on. Mm. But yeah, you know, the tactic was supposed to stop crime before it happened on some precog Minority Report shit. We'll just stop all the black people, you know, and, it had no effect. Like, not having stop and frisk did not cause this rise in crime. They put, we are delighted to say we were wrong. NYPD began scaling back stops under Kelly before the decision and accelerated the trend under Commissioner Bill Bratton. As a result, the number of stops reportedly fell by 97% from a high of 685,700 in 2011 to 22,900 in 2015. Not only did crime fail to rise, but New York hit record lows. Now, I think anybody that has watched The Wire or happens to be black is like, no shit. Right. You stop fucking with everyone, crime is gonna go down, because fucking with everyone increases the statistical chance of crime. Like, it's like that's why over-policing has always been a self-justifying thing. If you were to over-police any community of any people, you would be able to justify statistically eventually, because you'd be like, well, we find more drugs in the white community. It's like, yeah, you stop every white car that you see, some of them gonna have drugs. Yes, it will seem that they have a higher percentage of drugs than everyone because you stop all of them. You know, even when they have done analysis of data that has shown that stopping the percentage chance of stopping somebody is higher to find something for white people, even when they've done that, they still pull the you know, like, well you know, we just still need to stop these Negroes. So 0 to 100, Karen.
It gets a 0 to me because I knew.
Okay, all right, well, what about you, JL?
But the question is, so now,
how much are you fucked with? How much are you fucked with by this new admittance of the New York Daily Post New York Daily News that they are wrong? Stop and frisk not being in does not actually increase crime.
0. It's right. I mean, I think it's nice that they're admitting they were wrong, but it was also, you know, the trends before de Blasio came in, like they said, it was already being phased out. They were fighting it like on a political level, but they were already like reducing it.
Right.
Before, you know, they turned it into a political thing, but they were reducing it before he took office. So they kind of knew they could scale it back.
Yeah, I'm not fucked with it all. It's obviously that this is gonna happen. I'm gonna start a new session and invite you guys over. It'll just take a second, JL. You'll get a prompt to come over in a second. Give me 1 second. All right, let's get this call audience. Okay, prepare to go live. I'm doing that. Cool, video's working and I'm going live. Fuck it, we'll do it live. And I'm gonna invite you guys back on screen, Karen and JL. Karen just sent your invite, and JL, yeah, I just sent his invite. And then we should be good to go when he gets on screen. All right, cool. All right, so that's like it got zero for me and JL. Karen?
Zero.
So everybody got zeros. Okay, cool. North Carolina church backs Trump and campaign reaches out to black voters. Now, here's what's despicable about this. This is a more outreach than Bernie Sanders did in my city for the black vote. That is sad.
That's true.
And Donald Trump didn't even come to this.
I'm warming up my voice for this segment.
North Carolina church backs Trump, campaign reaches out to black voters. I actually saw the flyer for this, and it was just like all the black people that have become associated with his campaign, like Omarosa, those two black crows from Disney's Dumbo.
they dance across the stage.
I forget their names. Their names are like Sparkle and Goldie or some shit. I don't even remember those ladies' names, but you know the two that are like, oh, Mr. Trump, he's so good. He's so good to me. It's like they get on stage and testify.
Where's his, like, official black pastor? That dude who's gotten so much airtime.
Yes, that dude. He was at Mark Burns. He was there.
The Holy Sham.
Yep. Katrina Pearson was there with her lying ass. And then Laura Trump, his daughter-in-law, came. So we didn't even rank like an actual Trump. We got like a black people got like a bootleg married into the Trump. And they did this at the historically black church Antioch Road to Glory International Ministries in Charlotte, North Carolina. The church is now publicly supporting Trump, hosting a town hall today billed as a day of endorsement. Donald Trump was not in attendance.
No, because yeah. I think he's in
hell. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Like the preacher. no, he's in
unbelievable things right now. Okay, black churches love me. Okay, even though I gotta say, okay, I gotta tell the people, Jesus was white. Okay, this is just a fact. Okay, we all know it. They're telling you lies. Okay, whoever says that he's not white, they're lying. Okay, but I love the black. I love the black church. They're great churches. They're great people.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure they appreciate the endorsement.
Well, Trump,
he's going to say, you see this? Can you believe it? I got an endorsement from a black church, a black church. But, you know, these are the people they said I couldn't get. I get the black church. Okay. I understand them. It's where I'm from. Okay. I was raised, you know, very close. One limo ride. I was one limousine ride away from a black church growing up. So believe me, they know that I know them. I love them. Great people. Really great people.
Well, Mr. Trump, I have a question for you. I hear that you're going back to Cumberland County, you know, the arena that the one of your
supporters
punched a black dude. I mean, how do you feel going back to this town?
Let me tell you something, okay? When a black gives somebody the middle finger, I'm going to write it into law that old white men get to punch them, okay? This is, we need to be more law and order, okay? Okay, we need to be more law and order, which really means when a black kid does something I don't like, a white guy can take illegal action to hit him to maintain law and order, because we have too many middle fingers from black kids going around, okay? It's ruining the world.
I wonder if he ever paid that dude's bail like he promised. I bet that dude...
Trump is, like, consistently full of shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's impressive, is that, honestly, he's almost like a comedic character. Like, I forget what movie it is, but it'd be like the kind of guy you're on a journey with a guy, and halfway through the movie you realize everything he says is a lie, so you start doing the opposite of what he says.
Yes.
I'm going to give this money to the troops. Okay, we know for sure he didn't give money to the troops. I don't know where he put money, but we know for a fact it did not go to the troops.
Did you see the Hillary campaign attack ad that's like 3 minutes long and it's all of his speculation about his ties to Russia?
No, not yet.
Oh, it's on my face. They are not fucking around anymore. Like, oh, this is why I wanted Hillary more than Bernie, because this is literally like, this is like Marty McFly's dad punching Biff's dad or whatever. Like, this is her entire life of just charismatic white dudes, including her husband, always getting there first and being like, yeah, you're competent, you're a fucking political nerd, but no one likes you and you're a woman. This is not your spot. And it's like, he is the antithesis of Hillary in a lot of ways, where mm-hmm. even though people say they don't like him, charismatically, they do. They will watch anything that he is on because they do like watching him. And they do, even if it's just one of those, like, sit back and shake your head like, this slick son of a bitch. Like, even if it's that, you're still watching him and you're still doing it because you like him. You know, and with Hillary, she doesn't have the same charisma, and she doesn't get the same path, and she doesn't get to be dumb, and she actually is held to a standard of she needs to be consistent in her statements, and every action she's ever taken, she needs to be accountable for them and held to that. And so many other candidates that, you know, are men mostly, have never been held to that standard, mm-hmm. at least not to a significant degree. So it is like, this is just the fist balling up and the slow motion, like, punch in the face that Trump's gonna get if he even attempts to debate her. Or,
you know what, I was gonna say, my thought between the two of them is, I forget what Indiana Jones movie it was, mm-hmm. either maybe the first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark, where a dude goes, like, with two swords, he's like, and then Indiana Jones just takes out his pistol and shoots him dead one time.
Yes, like,
I feel like that's Hillary, like, letting him just go, believe me, we're gonna do crooked Hillary, unbelievable, terrible, believe me, we're gonna do it, I hate babies. And she's just gonna go, you're an idiot. I love her ad with the kids. I've seen it a lot already. Where it's just, cause, it captures both things. I get to be entertained by Trump while seeing him get taken down, which is actually the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Because when he goes, and I told them to go fuck themselves, and you see the little kids watching the screen, yes. And I'm like, that's great.
Yes. It's like, honestly, I think it's going to be a cakewalk from this point on. And I don't know that Bernie would have done as well, and been as vicious and mean as you need to be to fight a bully. Like, he's a bully, and you're not gonna be able to. That's where every Republican failed. They really thought they could out gentleman and adult this dude,
right?
But our country is not a mature country. Like, we're just not. We do like seeing the guy say some bullshit and go, put the balls on this guy, check him out. Like, that's our shit. And like, it's gonna take someone that's like, hey man, fuck this failed businessman piece of shit. Like, it's gonna take someone that does get nasty to beat him, in my opinion. I think that's why she's gonna win. And like, I would hope Bernie would have won, but it just, I don't think, even in the campaign against Hillary, Bernie didn't go low. Like, he could have, but he just seems to be like, kind of like, that ain't my brand. I'm not gonna do that. I have the principles to know, even with my fans being nasty and fucking, you know, completely like over the line, I'm never gonna be that. So I don't know if he would have been able to do that with Trump. Like, even now, they kind of need him to come out and attack Trump a little bit more, but his attacks are kind of like, this guy's just silly, right? You know, they're not vicious attacks that I think Hillary's gonna lay on this motherfucker. I do hope they debate, though.
Great. Although somebody speculated that Trump might want to bring in like the third party candidates,
right,
to, you know, and then back out, calling them not legit debates if the other candidates can't be in them. And dummies for Jill Stein, like Cornel West, will be like, oh, Brother Bill, it's not like that.
Oh,
my
no.
mom hates Cornel West. Like, it's incredible how much she is fed up with Cornel West. Like, when he comes on Bill Maher, she just rolls her eyes and goes, oh, this fucking guy.
Yeah, I can't fuck with, I can't fuck with him either.
But he's gonna be with the Jill, like, he's gonna be the group that, like, joins with Trump. Not joins him, but in the argument, like, yeah, well, but Sister Jill Stein needs to get in the debate with the bill so that she can alleviate and educate the populace and the population of the American people.
Oh, Lord.
Shut up, Cornell.
That's some good Cornell right there, man.
It's the spirit. It's not, it doesn't sound like it, but it's the spirit.
But you know what I mean. But it was pretty good, man. It was pretty good. It was, that is, he does like
Cornel
to hit that.
West.
My favorite.
I've seen him like, like ever since Bill Maher went on HBO, he has been on this like steady trajectory down.
Yes.
Like I remember being like, oh, good point, Cornell. And now I'm like, oh no, Cornell.
Like,
West.
He just lost his marbles at some point, man. My favorite thing though is the difference between, you know, Brother Bill, and then when he goes, Dear Brother something. Dear Brother is like, that's bad.
Mm-hmm. He's like, that's never good.
Like that, he's about to say some fucked up.
You gotta get the double fingers. I'm trying to do the double fingers in the picture. Yeah, I'm not a Democrat. I am a revolutionary Christian brother or whatever the fuck. Making up your own like suicide squad of liberal Christian professors.
Like anytime someone crosses him, like, and he gets asked about that person, we're like, well, what do you think? I mean, Melissa Harris Perry recently said, and he's like, oh, the dear sister, Melissa Harris Perry. You're like, he's about to say something fucked up. Like, whatever comes after that is completely biased and paranoid and fucked up.
I feel like he's like one of those dudes, sorry to take this on the Cornel West trip, but I feel like he's one of those guys who, he's not just unhappy with Hillary Clinton because, I mean, he just doesn't like her because he's almost demanding perfection from her.
Yeah.
He's not in that, like, I disagree with her on this. He'll literally just rattle off and, like, even Bernie Sanders isn't the candidate you wanted if these are all your complaints.
Well, what's funny is, like, for example, Mark Lamont Hill, oh, by the way, 100 for all these black people, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the church, right? I'm assuming we all agree. Black people supporting Trump. All right, so
I'm about to say there shouldn't be another number.
Yeah, I mean 100, right? Anyway, so Mark Lamont Hill got some backlash today because he essentially said, I'm not afraid to vote green, even if that means we get Trump. We can afford to lose an election, but we can't afford to lose our values, right? And then his vote was going to go to the Green Party. Now, what's interesting to me is, as a coordinated group, as a, you know, like, yeah, the DNC, the RNC, and whatever, the Green Party has no candidates on any ballots. Like, it would just be president, even if they could win, even if they got, like, 5%, right? So, automatically, it's kind of like, you got to turn the side out of that, because it's like, where's your work the other 3 years where there's not a presidential election? Like, you can't just show up every fourth year and be like, we about to throw some salt in the game, y'all. Like, like, you should be building a groundswell of people the entire time these other 3 years, so that when you do get ready to, like, take a presidency, I also have people to vote for locally and in my state. You know, I can't expect you to build a coalition out of nothing with just the presidency, you know? And not to mention, it's just completely unrealistic. There'll never be a third party president if you don't build up a bunch of coalitions before you get to the presidency, right?
Correct.
But it always serves as like a protest vote and a shock vote and a whatnot. Now, I'm not so interested in debating people fucking whatever they want to do with their individual vote.
Yeah.
You know, it's really up to you. But I did find it interesting, some of his reasoning, because I think the idea that we can afford a Trump presidency,
that depends on who you ask.
It really does speak to a certain level of privilege you have to have,
right,
in order to say that you would risk it. I'm not saying this means you have no problems and things won't, but you're willing to risk however much worse in your mind life can get. But some people are gonna get fucked. You know what I mean?
Really bad. Like, really bad.
Like LGBTQ people.
To people who are cynical, I would say Trump is in the negative direction, somebody who will shake you out of your cynicism.
Right.
Like, you'll see how much a vote, like, you may not get to feel how important your vote is with Hillary Clinton. You will feel how important it is with Donald Trump, because
that's
the first guy. Everybody, you know, the kind of people who like to stay above and act like they're better than voting and better than this will be like, it doesn't matter. You elect Bush, you elect Obama or Romney. They're still going to cater to Wall Street. They're still going to block. Like, they'll say things like that. Well, Donald Trump is the first candidate where I go, no, I don't know.
Right.
Like, that it's going to be sort of within the bounds of, like, he's on the level of things that really that a president, you know, when you talk about safety, security, kind of keeping the country going, like in the, keep it above water, forget in the right direction. Like, he's the type of person when he's asking like repeatedly about nuclear weapons and telling allies we might break this and then we're going to do this with our economy and we're going to pull out of all these things. You're like, dude, you're going to like, you're like Walter Peck at the EPA in the original Ghostbusters, just going, shut it all down. You're like, we're going to get out of here now.
The only Ghostbusters that you will acknowledge, by the way.
That's right.
I think he's more like the mayor from Jaws.
Don't ever compare me to the mayor of Jaws. My favorite line, maybe of the summer, oddly enough, was from a man in Lady Ghostbusters.
Written by a team of women writers. Oh, good job, Andy Garcia. Way to deliver that
Cuban passion.
Yes. Yes, Cuban. Fire. Yes, Cuban. All right. So, but see, the thing is, I think some of the backlash to Mark Lamont Hill's like theory is like unwarranted, because I honestly think it's harmless. Like, I really don't think there's enough people to shake the election the way that he would like. And I think he's positioning himself so that when Hillary wins, he gets to go, I'm not like the rest of you motherfuckers. I voted my conscience and I voted to the left, and you guys are the ones responsible for anything Hillary does, not me. I like, this is not the candidate of my choosing. And I think that's kind of how he's setting it up, so he'll have the moral high ground. But the thing is, the game theory of it, the theory of just like, okay, cool, let's say enough people vote to the left of Hillary that she loses this election, right? And Democrats lose this election, and fucking Trump, Donald Trump,
three conservative, like super conservative justices,
right,
drops a nuke on Saudi Arabia,
World War III,
it deports Muslims. Because honestly,
a big beautiful wall
that Mexico pays for, right? This would be our Brexit. Like, I don't feel like it's so far-fetched that we could have a Brexit type thing, because it didn't take much for racism to spark up, other than the presence of minorities and the social conscience over there and in people's faces, right? And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, all brown people need to go, or we need to leave and kick these brown people out. So here's the thing I was thinking, though. I don't know, even if things panned out exactly the way he says, that our country would immediately have a backlash of going as far to the left as possible. I really think the backlash to Trump is still going to be some version of Hillary Clinton. Like, people are still going to galvanize around the Democratic Party, and if you listen to her platform anyway, it's still really fucking left. Like they may have pandered a bit to the central the center people, you know, some of the people that aren't impressed with what the Republicans have done, and they definitely tried to get those people during the DNC. Like, there's a lot of like, hey, I know you're conservative and you don't like Trump, but you know, you can kind of come over here. We're not that bad, right, guys? We love the military and we love police, and we're not just a bunch of fucking socialists. Like, come on over here and shit. And I do think because she did that, I kind of hate when they do that, but because she did that, she gave added fuel to the fire, you know, because then everybody that doesn't like her gets to be like, see, she's gonna betray everybody when she gets that office and all that shit. But I think one of the things that people are missing is that the reaction to a bad presidency isn't always a push to the left. Like, we got two terms of George W. Bush.
Yes, we did.
You know what I mean? Like, that should have been a one-term presidency. Mm-hmm. But you're just not guaranteed you're going to have this charismatic, well-organized campaign in 4 years from now. Like, I don't know who they're running 4 years from now. Do you? You know what I mean? Like, it's such a big gamble. And ultimately, it does come back to the Democratic Party. Like, even that push to the left still has to come back to what we really want is the Democratic Party to go further to the left. And I think he has a good strategy as far as, you know, how he thinks it'll play out. I just don't think it'll play out that way. And I think that the people working from the inside of party pushing it to the left is probably about the best we're going to get. I don't know for a fact how it's going to play out, but that's my guess, is you have to work with from within the Democratic Party and push your candidate on certain issues such as marriage equality and things like that to get it to happen. I don't think we have a blueprint of this protest vote ever really working, you know. Somebody tried to bring up Ross Perot, but I was like, that really wasn't the same as a protest vote. Mm-hmm. Or one side. Like, he got those votes from Democrats and Republicans.
Yep.
all right, so
it's hard to believe he's still alive. Oh, he 102.
I don't know. By the way, I'm not mad at Mark Lamont Hill. Like, he just looked extremely progressive, left wing black person. It's okay. Like, people are fucking viscerally upset with that dude. Like, fuck you, mother.
Right.
I'm like, so is that going to be the thing? Are we just going to tell everybody, like, you better vote for Hillary or shut the fuck up? Like, it's okay. He, you know, like, this isn't.
You know what I'm curious about?
Yeah.
If Hillary gets elected and actually has a strong first term,
mm-hmm.
does some progressive things, appoints some nice progressive Supreme Court justices, et cetera, et cetera. How many, because then that's the test to see, do people get online or do they hold on to these grudges and these ideas of her where they're going to be like, she's just doing, because it's like, no, now she's the boss. So now you saw what she'll do. You could say she pandered this and that, but she's been the boss for 4 years or 3.5 years. So now you know what she's about. How many people will join and how many people will kind of stick to their fucking liar and
right.
bitch, and I don't like her, and I like, we need somebody better.
Well, much like all women,
you know, the Republicans will do that. That's for sure. But it's the question of, will she? You know, will the Democrats rally further around her, or will they maintain these kind of grudges?
Well, much like all women, people love women when they are in a job way more than they love a woman when she's trying to get a job.
Right.
Like when they're in the position, because of just the nature of how things are set up against women in general, it is much harder for them to get these positions, but they're much more competent at these positions and better at managing them.
Have to be.
Right. And then everyone relaxes then. It's like, oh yeah, yeah, you're doing a great job. But then when it's like, all right, now I want a promotion, it's like, bitch, are you crazy? Like, you are terrible at your job. Like, so I do wonder if, you know, if she wins, which I'm assuming she will, I think she would do a great job, and I think she would continue a lot of things that Obama does, and that's about the best we can hope for in this country. Of course, I'm extremely pragmatic, so, you know, I don't get swept up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say, I don't get really swept up in a lot of rhetoric and shit, and I still expect people to make mistakes. I still expect there to be shortcomings. I still expect people that are critical of her to never back down, you know. It is what it is. It's like, Obama changed his view, quote unquote, on marriage equality, but there's still gonna be people that are like, well, that dude, he walked in not having that view, so fuck him, you know. It just is what it is. It's the nature of the position.
Yeah.
All right.
I forgot what I was gonna say.
Let's go to the guest of the race, man. Everybody's favorite. Oh wait, I'm sorry, hold up, we do have one more new thing that you've never heard of. This is probably gonna be your first time. It's gonna be your first time experiencing this. It's white people news. All right, so let me play the song for white people news. Let's see, we'll do this one this time.
Oh Carly Rae.
I knew half of you would know. In my way. I wasn't looking for this, but now you're in my way. Your stare was holding, ripped jeans, skin was showing, hot night wind was blowing. Where you think you're going, baby? Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy. And well, here's my number, so call me, baby. Hey, baby. All right, here's some white people news, guys. Y'all ready to talk about these white folks and the things that go on? Because after we talk about all this serious shit, we need a palate cleanser, guys. We need to know what's going on with white folks. Here's one: cooking up trouble. Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart join forces for a new celebrity dinner party show. That's right.
Oh, that's gonna be lit. Yeah. Two ex-cons. I am here for it. Yes.
That is true. They are two ex-cons.
Am I the only one that's realizing this?
That's a good point. But yeah, they hook up. They're going to do a dinner show with the 44-year-old rapper and the 75-year-old lifestyle guru. It'll be on VH1. It's an unscripted series. And it's going to be called Martha and Snoop's Dinner Party, where they invite a bunch of different celebrities to eat dinner made by them.
That's going to be fun. Going to be a lot of fushizzle, my nizzles.
It's gonna be a bunch of jokes about what kind of herbs are you putting in it, Snoop? Mister. But yeah, I can't wait to see this.
I am all in.
Martha and Snoop's Dinner Party will redesign traditional food competition shows in a new, different, and very funny way. Snoop added of the show and his co-star, my homegirl Martha and I have a special bond that goes back.
That's my homegirl.
We're gonna be cooking and drinking and having a good time with our exclusive friends. Can't wait for you to see how we roll together.
Yeah, because you know about that C-block dog.
Man, my man Snoop Dogg has a longevity that none of us saw
coming. No,
period. Like,
he's gonna outlive all us.
Like, it maybe between him and Ice Cube, those are like the two most improbable lovable Negroes of all time. Like, just what? Murder was the
round.
Murder was the case. The other dude made a song called White Women.
I was listening to The Predator at the gym. Mm-hmm. And it made me think, wow, people are upset about Black Lives Matter. Have they listened to this dude 25 years ago was ready to like get an AK out and just start, you know, mowing down white people.
Yeah, he called him like, I remember he had a song called Cave Bitch.
Like, yeah, I can't even. That was off of Lethal Injection.
Can't even imagine that in 2016. Like that, if Future just came out with Cave Bitch out of nowhere, people would be like, that's the end of his career then, right? Yeah. In other white people news, Eddie Redmayne and his wife Hannah Methamane, I don't know what her last name is, coordinate in white as they enjoy a day off baby duty at Rio Olympics beach volleyball.
You know, I don't know who neither one of these people is.
Eddie Redmayne was, let's see, what
he won the Oscar for Stephen Hawking, The Theory of Everything.
He also won the Oscar for Danish Girl, maybe?
Nominated for an Oscar. Okay. DiCaprio won.
Okay, Karen, you would know him from the last Wachowski brothers film, Siblings.
Jupiter Ascending.
He was in there. Okay. Did you see that with me? I don't remember if you saw that with me.
I don't remember either.
Probably not. It was horrible. You would definitely remember it. It's a traumatic experience. Me just bringing it up now kind of makes me sad.
Oh.
Anyway, so you don't know him, but Karen never knows white people. I told you guys, she walks out the room with white shit coming on. At any rate, they, went down to Rio de Janeiro on Tuesday, ahead of Friday's Olympic opening ceremonies, and they hung out in all white, matching all white. He had on some black shorts. And this is the thing that white people thought was newsworthy and put into the news. They decided that we need to spread the word that Eddie Redmayne and his wife decided to wear white and go to the Olympics. So there you guys have that breaking news there in whiteness.
Breaking news.
While we were arguing about whether Paul O'Neill was killed purposely by the police and covered up, they were talking about Eddie Redmayne's clothes. Let's see what else happened. Oh, Fox News continues to have problems. Roger Ailes has been accused of sexual harassment for a couple people. That one horrible woman, Andrea Teturos, I think is her name. Mm-hmm. She's always saying something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. She said she was harassed by him.
And I believe her.
Yep. Fox took me off the air after I spoke up about Roger Ailes' harassment. Mm-hmm. It's just, is it wrong of me to go, well, yeah. Like, that's what you do for a living. How could you be shocked? You know, like, if fucking racy trash stars being like, oh, they discriminated against me for being black at Fox News, I'd be like,
no shit.
Right. Are you just mad because that's your job? Like, what is the point? At any rate.
You know, it's just a problem when they fit on these titties. You other women, we don't care about y'all.
Yeah, Shelley Ross has come forward as well, saying Roger Ailes tried to set up sexual alliance with her, saying, you know, and this is back in 1981.
Oh, so he's been doing this shit for a very, 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 very long time.
Yeah, he's old, I mean.
Right.
You know.
Is it going to be like a sexual harassment squad movie with like Bill Cosby, Roger Ailes, like some country with a female president? They're like, we can't get them through normal diplomatic chains. We need you to take this bitch down from the inside.
Yeah. Ah! Instead of Suicide Squad, just sexual harassment squad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be, yeah. You take all the sexual harassers and Viola Davis will get them together. all right.
What would their weapons be? Well,
obviously an eggplant.
The wolf howl that we learned about yesterday.
Yeah, wolf whistle. Street harassment would be one of the weapons. Mm-hmm. All right. Genius things you can do with your dishwasher that will change your life, including scrubbing potatoes, cooking salmon, and washing shoes. That's right. More white people news, guys.
Somebody didn't have nothing else to do.
You can take your dishwasher and use it for a task other than washing dishes.
Dishwasher that you put dirty dishes in so it can wash them clean, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That dishwasher.
From toothbrushes to Wellington boots, the clever machine can be used to wash much more than pots and pans. In fact, you can even cook a turkey or a salmon fillet in there.
Can you wash your clothes in it too?
Well, my understanding is that a dishwasher gets to about 150 degrees.
Okay.
The internal temperature of a chicken must reach at least 160 degrees so you don't get salmonella.
What you do, run it twice?
What are the rules? Are we steaming it?
What the fuck? Is it in a Ziploc bag? What's happening? Is my salmon going to bounce around and fall to pieces?
To wash shoes, as gross as it may sound, your dishwasher will give you squeaky clean shoes. Boots are ideal footwear for popping in the dishwasher, but should have the liners removed before and should be laid out horizontally. Flip boots can also be given a washing machine. Just hook them up to the over-the-top rack. You can wash your hairbrushes in there. I just want to know, so does the next load have a bunch of hair on it? And boots, dirt, and
grime, and grass,
salmonella,
and bugs, and insects, and off.
Now, I knew this was going in white people's news because the picture I found on the internet of a chicken in a dishwasher had no seasoning on it.
Of course it didn't.
So it explains a lot.
Yeah, okay? You washed it away. Your dishwasher washed your seasoning away.
I hate the profile, but it didn't matter if it was a before or after picture. No seasoning on the chicken is complete. That is complete blasphemy. Okay. You can clean potatoes with it. Don't feel like scrubbing out the potatoes, so you just line them up on the top rack and pop on a rinse only cycle without detergent. But what if I want them to have that lemon pledge taste? I want that cascade flavor to it. I got to put some. Are they putting like bouillon cubes in the fucking?
Right, I didn't buy the special kind with the Clorox for nothing.
What is wrong with white people?
Got the ramen noodle cubes in there.
Oh god,
ramen noodle seasoning.
You can cook salmon.
I don't get that one.
Yeah, you put it in two sheets of foil, spritz with some lemon, and drizzle with some butter over it before tightly sealing it with another piece of foil on the top rack. Set it to the hottest setting and let it run a full cycle for perfectly cooked fish. Now, I feel like white people went, I will see your fish in the work microwave and raise you fish in the dishwasher.
Your fish gonna taste like fucking soap suds.
You can wash your hats in there. You can degrease car parts.
They're trying to get somebody fucking killed.
Clean your toiletries was the last thing. So there you guys go, man.
That's 100 for me.
Yeah, as Titus would say, what white nonsense is this? All right,
I'm so confused right now.
All right, now let's get to some Guess Another Race. Okay, guys, you guys have been updated, your palates have been
that
cleansed.
Was a lot.
Yeah, the dishwasher thing broke my whole timeline this morning.
Right.
I took a picture of just the woman and the caption of like, use it to clean potatoes, clean shoes, and make fish. And people are like, what the fuck are you doing, Rod? It's too early. All right. Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's Guess the Race time. Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's Guess the Race time. That's right, it's time for Guess the Race, the number one game show going across all of podcast land. We read and play news articles from all over the globe, and we ask our contestants today, JL Covan of the Righteous Freak Podcast, pick up his album on iTunes, Israeli Tortoise, to guess the race. And the chat room plays along, and yes, they are racist.
And right, this episode has been sponsored
by Loot Crate. That's right. Loot Crate is a free, well, not free. It is a monthly mystery crate filled with exclusive items from the biggest and best pop culture franchises. Go to lootcrate.com/TVGWT. Enter offer code TVGWT and you get $3 off. That's right. This month is, anti-heroes, whether it's bad guys doing good things for the wrong reason or good guys with questionable tactics. August is the perfect time to pick up the anti-hero box. Okay, you're gonna get people like Archer, Dark Horse Comics, Kill Bill, DC Comics. You get a wearable item, a monthly t-shirt, collectibles, action figures, all that kind of stuff. And you can upgrade with Loot Crate DX, where you get a bigger box, bigger loot, and higher caliber collection of items. And that is less than $50 a month, but you get $100 worth of goodies. Mm-hmm. From collectibles to apparel to home goods and more. lootcrate.com/TBGWT, code TBGWT, sign up by the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time to make sure you receive this month's crate before the cutoff happens. Then it's over. All right. Plot to hold up a South Carolina tobacco shop with a musket goes up in smoke when a manager takes the gunman on with his fist and others plain refuse to give up their money. Mm. Mm-hmm. A musket, that's some old fashioned shit right there.
Yeah, one shot and it's a 5 minute refill. So you better hit.
An armed robber who tried to hold up a tobacco store in South Carolina with a musket like gun saw his plans go up in smoke thanks to the bravery of his victims. The man entered the Tobacco Junction, formerly Tobacco Jungle, in Anderson on Sunday morning, armed with what appeared to be a flintlock pistol, and pointed it at the manager's back. But the man wasn't intimidated, and as seen in the video hosted on WYFF4, spun around and attacked the startled criminal in what was the start of a badly bungled robbery. The manager then ran to the front door, causing the gunman to chase him. That gave the clerk and the customer who just witnessed the startling encounter time to duck into the back of the store, with the video apparently showing the clerk hitting an alarm button on the way. The criminal then runs around to the cash register, seemingly panicking, and fumbles with a drawer before ducking out of view to the rear of the store. Tammy Mendez, Tobacco Junction clerk, who wasn't present at the time of the robbery, told the Daily Mail that her manager, who she only named as Danny, was a hero. In my opinion, he saved everyone's life. He let the robber follow him so everyone else could go to protective areas. Seeing the manager had fled, the robber returned and demanded the clerk and customer hand over their money, but neither one of them complied. He then left empty-handed. Police believe he drove off in a car parked near the store, and they're now hunting for the suspect. Guess the race of this suspect.
White.
All right, let's check the chat room and see what they believe the race. Huh?
I said, I don't get to play no more.
Oh, that's right. Karen. That's right. You can't see my screen
no,
now.
I
so
can't.
You can play. Karen, what race do you think the suspect was?
Impossible movie, white man.
All right. Impossible white man movie. Let's see. Using a family heirloom, white. David Crockett, white. His ancestors used that exact gun when stealing the Indians' land and smallpox.
Oh.
Inherited that weapon from his great-great-great-grandpappy, the slave catcher, white. Whiter than the cooking with the dishwasher. All right, the correct answer is, and all of you guys missed it, he was black.
Oh, you want to prove this to me? I need a picture.
You need to accept them booze first.
No, I will not accept no booze.
Here's his picture.
This dear brother.
The dear brother with the musket. Oh, man, just setting us back.
Where the hell did he get that musket from?
Yeah, I love, he was so ineffectual with this. Like, people looked, a musket could still kill you. It's still going to send a metal ball through your chest. And people were like, nah, man, I'll take my chances.
I'm just bothered by the fact, see, my assumption was, A, the musket sounds like a white dude thing, but right. Also, in our climate, black dude walking around with a rifle on his shoulder, just willy-nilly, I don't think he would have gotten to the store.
Well, it was like a pistol version of a musket. So, you know.
Oh, like a Sleepy Hollow kind of thing. Like
exactly. The only show where the two most attractive people never hooked up. Get the fuck out of here. And the most progressive white man from the 1600s or whatever the fuck.
Right.
She got the one white dude who's like, why do we call them niggers? I shan't ever say it. All right, let's go to the bonus round. Here, I'm not even gonna play the music, we'll just get right into another article.
Okay.
Let's see, how about this one? A couple is accused of abandoning their 2-year-old so they could go play Pokemon Go.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Pinal County deputies arrested a Santan Valley couple after their 2-year-old boy was found abandoned outside his residence. The parents, Brent Daly and Brianne Daly, were arrested for child endangerment and child neglect after they left the child home alone for up to 90 minutes. Both parents admitted they had left the child home alone so they could go play the Pokemon smartphone game in nearby neighborhoods. Guess the race.
They are...
Damn it, you know, I feel like this could be either, but I'm going to go white because, you know.
All right.
I'm just going to play the odds.
I'm going to go against the grain. I'm going to go black this time.
All right, let's check the chat room, see what they believe. Taryn's trying to get the win over here. Brent and Brianne, white. If it was black, a black dad, Pokemon Go equals cigarettes at the store.
Oh,
it was a black man be Pokemon Go and never come back. Is that what y'all trying to say? that's right. I do it too, y'all. I'm racist. They left the kid home so they could play Disney Channel white. They left a window open white. Trash ketchup white. The correct answer is, oh, like Ash Ketchum, Trash Ketchum. I get it. The correct answer is, they were white. And Karen, you got it wrong.
I'm not as racist as I thought I was.
I see you're not demanding proof this time.
No, I'm not.
That's telling.
I'm not demanding proof. Show it anyway, but I'm not demanding proof.
I just think it's kind of telling that you didn't need to be proved that these people weren't who I said they were. I don't know why. Oh, there you go. I guess that's as big as it'll get. Sorry, guys. All right. So I guess it's time for a little sword ratchetness, guys. I'm assuming that that means JL beat Karen.
And, yes, you did.
He's the winner of
I'm bad at this, JL.
The winner of our contest. Yeah. all right. So it's time for some sword ratchetness, and then we'll get out of here. It's the last thing we do every show. As soon as it wants to play the sound effect. All Mm-hmm. And that's why you don't play Pokemon Go with your kid outside of the house, okay, guys?
That's the truth.
Let's see. A sword attack on two horses. That's right. First they came for the people, and you did nothing. And now they're attacking the horses. Not even the horses are safe from the swords. Separate but equally savage attacks in Ashford have resulted in two horses receiving horrific wounds from a machete or sword. The Gardaí have been unable to establish a motive, and now horse owners living nearby are fearful of further attack. It's like horse terrorism. Both incidents occurred within days of one another. While the injuries sustained by both animals weren't fatal, they left the two horses with significant and gruesome injuries. A lady called to Ashford Garda Station to report on the night of Friday, July 15th, that her horse had been injured while out in the field at Glanmore. The horse appeared to have been slashed by either machete or sword type implement. Days later, another man called the station to report his horse had also been injured in the same field on the night of Tuesday, July 19th. The two fields where the horses were kept are in opposite sides of a narrow laneway of the main Ashford to Devil's Glen Road. Well, that's the problem. It's on Devil's Glen.
Oh, that name.
Yeah. It's like,
that should be your clue right there.
I think that's the name of the town from Stranger Things. Garda Paul O'Sullivan says the savagery of both attacks had shocked many in the community. We have been contacted by other horse owners from the area who are afraid for the well-being of their own animals. We don't have a motive for either of the attacks, but we are hopeful that someone may have noticed something on either of the nights in question, maybe a suspect car or someone acting in a suspicious manner. The wounds inflicted on these horses were really horrific. There seems to be no obvious connection apart from the fact that the horses were located in the same general area. I wonder what color were the horses. Mm-hmm. Brown, maybe? Black horses? Black mares matter? Both animals were taken to the local vet, who ascertained with a sword or machete type instrument have been used. Okay, we already covered that. And they're appealing to anyone who can assist with providing more information, guys. So if you know somebody with a bloody sword and a mad on for horses, report that motherfucker, okay? This is they're attacking. I mean, listen, maybe you don't love other people. Everybody loves horses. Come on, let's get our shit together and get this guy off the streets. Speaking of getting our shit together, why don't you guys go on iTunes and buy Israeli Tortoise? Mm-hmm. Okay, support JL Covan. You got a Righteous Prick coming out tomorrow too?
It's already out now, but I haven't like posted it. I just did it this afternoon. So okay. it's a short one. I give a defense of Alex Rodriguez. I say,
yes.
If anybody can understand the struggles of a large, beige, handsome ball of talent, it's me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have a unique perspective to understand the burden that he has in this world. And then I talk about the album and that's it. So it's a quick, it's like 29 minutes. I talk about Ariel Winter and Dane Cook, of course. And then, so it's a quickie.
Yeah. Well, I know, lately you've been having a lot of Mike Payne on.
Yeah, just politics season. So he's off until November now.
Mike Payne, who I like to call the James Harden of the Righteous Prick podcast, you know, puts up tremendous numbers, and is consistently, you know, he's going to be in the MVP discussion at the end of the year, but I think we all know where that trophy's coming home to, guys. All right. Chris Lambert is the, Carmelo. He's going to, opt out of doing, any more shows. He's going to say it's for Black Lives Matter, but we all know what it is, Chris. All right. You can't
but
get
he
that.
He wants unity between black quarterbacks and white starlets.
Well, they're both revelations. So I
can see. He didn't like my post this weekend. I was at the pool with my nephew, so the lifeguard was black. So I posted on Facebook. I said, I'm out here with a black lifeguard, but Chris Lambert's probably tweeting about black quarterbacks like it's 2013.
Hey, did you see the picture of the Olympics for the swimming, you know, the swimming competition or whatever? Mm-hmm. And the lifeguard was a black woman?
Yeah.
It's like, why y'all, like, that's the time y'all give us a job? Word. It's like, here, you definitely won't be needed for this. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, man, make sure you guys support the album. And we had people that were there at the live taping.
Yeah,
a good amount of people. So
yeah, and
it's a chance for the nationwide family to get involved. And if you get it, give it like a nice review or just click the 5 stars real quick, because that also helps. Even mm-hmm. if you're not going to buy it, if you're going to listen to it somewhere else, you can click the 5 stars. You know, today, tomorrow, and that also kind of generates, I don't know, some kind of activity on the album.
Yeah, if it was whack, you would have heard by now. You know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. we had too many people that went. Like, it would have been like, yeah, it was. I mean, he's not that. I mean, I'm glad he's on the show. You know, we would have had that, and we haven't had that. Nobody spoiled any jokes for me, so I'm gonna watch it and listen to this.
I'm excited.
Completely clean. And I can't wait, man. And I don't know why A-Rod gets all the flack and Derek Jeter gets to go marry a 20-something-year-old model.
I break it down. I break it down for the people this week.
That's why I fuck with you, JL. I might disagree with you on everything else. But you are one funny man that has A-Rod's back, and that's what's important here. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, we'll be back tomorrow with Nick Jew from What's the Tea. Until then, I love you.
I love you too.
Mwah. And chat room.